Tomorrow's news today.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
We all tend to get caught up in the minutiae of all the different political and cultural developments, and there's a lot of negativity, a lot of dark things happening in the world, but there's also a lot of really good, positive things happening. And I just wanted to reach out to all the listeners and viewers and tell you how much I appreciate you and how amazing you are of every race, color, and creed that love liberty and freedom and believe in our species and believe in God and believe in a better future. We've done so many incredible things as a species together, and we've got even greater things that we're going to do together. You know, we're told we're obsolete and that AI is better than us, when really it's just a reflection of things that we've created and things we've done. And we ourselves are just a reflection of God, made in God's image. We're not God, but we have the potentiality to really just envision and then build anything we can imagine. And we've proven that. So God doesn't make trash. God doesn't make junk. And humanity really, really is special. And I've been on air 32 years, and I think back how few people were awake to what was happening and the predatory globalists, technocrat, eugenicist death cult, and how many people are awake today and the global awakening that's happening all over the planet. And I just am very, very heartened about the future of our species as more people wake up and more people get engaged. And a lot of people see fighting tyranny as work. We're designed to be engaged in society. We're designed to promote good and fight evil. And it is a fulfilling, animating contest of liberty that Thomas Jefferson talked about, and that's what we're all engaged in here. So to all my fellow freedom lovers, info warriors, people that value the truth and justice, I just wanted to salute you again and thank you, and just wanted you to realize you really are the resistance. But more than just the resistance to tyranny, you are the engine of good and human creativity and discovery. And that's what life is really all about. It's so magic. Just look at all the beauty around you. Just look at all of the incredible creations that God's made. And look at all the things that we've done together. And just realize the globalists want to demoralize you with ugly art and culture and architecture and literature. They admit that. They want to break your will. Don't ever let them do that. And when I say that, I'm not lecturing you, because sometimes I get down. You know, I get upset about what's happening. But I have to always just realize that it's all part of a process of free will. So for myself and the entire crew at alexjoneslive.com, as we continue on the next phase of the info war, just very, very thankful for all of you, and just looking forward to the future together in the fight for free will and consciousness and controlling our own destiny. The universe lies before us as a gift that God gave us, and it's the gift of experiencing it all together. And it's the gift of experiencing the highs and the lows and everything in between. That's really what it's all about, the final equation. So for myself, the whole family at Alex Jones Live, I just want to thank you all again and just let you all remember that you are the resistance. But you're more than that. You're also the future. And in all of us lies the seeds of the universe and the future destiny of our species. God bless you all.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is the 16th of June, 2026, and things are being exposed that have been hidden for a very long time. The veil is being rent, the curtain torn, and the seething evil behind the scenes is being exposed for the first time. We are going to be going over the Rape Gang Inquiry Report, as well as, of course, the Memorandum of Understanding between America and Iran. Huge show today. We'll be joined by Carl Benjamin and Frank Wright later in the show to talk about the impact that this rape gang inquiry is going to have on the UK government and what we can do to achieve justice, if such a thing is even possible. I'm Harrison Smith, sitting in for Alex Jones. We'll be back in 90 seconds.
I'll start with sexual Tyrannosaurus Rex.
This is rocket fuel. This is incredible. This is rocket fuel. Because I'm a sexual Tyrannosaurus Rex. This is a cocktail I drink every day. A squirt of ultramethylene blue and T3. You are insane if you don't get it. Insane if you don't get it. Okay? Well, listen. Well, listen. You are insane if you don't get it. Insane if you don't get it. I am a wrecking ball. I am obsessed with this. I can't stop. Stop. And now I'm having this. Because I'm a sexual Tyrannosaurus Rex. This is the truth. Because I'm a sexual Tyrannosaurus Rex. You understand that? Does that burn into your brain?
I think I'm going to buy some methylene blue now.
Yeah, I'm sure.
You are listening to an AJN Live Frontline Report. If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Alex Jones Live. I'm Harrison Smith, sitting in for Alex Jones. Very happy to be here with you. Happy to be back. Returned from a week vacation up in the mountains. What a week it's been. I sort of hesitate to say I'm happy to be back because the news we're going to cover today is nothing to be happy about, is one way to put it. The Rape Gang Inquiry Report out of the UK has been published thanks to the efforts of Rupert Lowe and the Restore Party. And it's, well, it's more disturbing than you can possibly imagine. We will be covering that extensively today. We have some incredible guests out of the UK, such as Carl Benjamin and Frank Wright, who are going to be joining us to break down what effect this is going to have, and if it's even possible to get justice for this level, this scale of criminality. But what I'm not going to do is spend the whole show simply reading the most egregious and horrifying portions of the Rape Gang inquiry. We are going to do that a little bit, obviously, to give it context and, you know, viewer discretion advised for this entire show because of the contents of this report, the contents of reality that we have to contend with. But it's not going to be simply the most horrifying examples one after another. I could do that. I could spend the entire show simply reading verbatim out of the inquiry report. And it's just, again, I don't have words. It is beyond description what's being described here. And in fact, it's why I'm not going to spend a lot of time on the details of the individual attacks. Again, we'll bring you the details. I'll tell you what they are, but we're not going to, you know, revel in it. Because it's just one aspect of what actually is going on, and we need to zoom out and look at this for what it is, which is an attack on our way of life, a genocidal attack against the people of the UK, and how it is part and parcel with the New World Order that was created after World War II. It's all one, it's all pieces of one giant attack. And we'll break that down. Like, I'm going to break down how this ties into the creation of the NHS and the Tavistock Institute, born out of the Tavistock Clinic, and how this reality that's exposed in the Rape Gang Inquiry Report is in no way an accident. The one thing I keep seeing people say is, oh, the government has failed. Sure, if you want to put it one way, the government does accrue to itself monopoly power over physical force. And so they do have a responsibility and an obligation to protect their citizens, so they failed in that regard. But that's not the right way to frame it. They have succeeded wildly in their aims. Their aims are exactly what have happened, and it's impossible for it to be any other way. So much of, you know, what's being talked about in the Rape Gang inquiry online is framed as if it's, you know, again, a failure of the powers that be, and sort of just like, well, people just don't want to be called racist. And so you have gigantic, industrialized, essentially networks of criminals operating with total impunity. That is not explained by simply people not wanting to be called racist, especially not since it started back in the 1950s when people weren't quite so squeamish about being called racist. Actually, didn't have the same power it does now. That's an insufficient explanation for what's going on here. It's a part of it. It's a large part of it, certainly, but it misses the forest for the trees. This is an attack. This is a plan. This is a top-down war being fought against the people of Britain, but also the rest of Europe. And it's absolutely no coincidence that at this very same time, you have a drive to institute digital ID in every European country, the UK banning social media, except for Blue Sky, of course. And if you've been following my work on the War Room here on the Alex Jones Network, or even on Moonbase Live that we do, we've been talking about Blue Sky since before most people even knew what it was, because it was always intended to be what it's becoming. The centralized, the only allowed platform, because it has built into it Chinese-style censorship rules and is absolutely dominated by leftists. It's not a coincidence that this is happening in every European nation all at once at exactly the same time, or that it has been happening for the last 70 years to every European nation at exactly the same time and in exactly the same way. So we're going to be breaking that down and getting into the history of it and how or what we could possibly do to achieve justice. Again, if such a thing is even possible, when something is so evil and has gone on for so long, I'm not even sure if justice is even something we can try to achieve. We'll get into it. We'll try to figure that out, because again, it's not about the individual disturbing aspects of each case. It's about taking them all together and understanding the true scale, scope, the again, I literally don't have words to describe what we're looking at here. It's more like a feeling. It's more like the feeling that you get standing on the edge of a cliff, right? You might not have words to describe the feeling in your gut when you are standing at the edge of a bottomless pit and feeling, you know, the pull towards the abyss. I don't have words for it, but again, it's not about the individual details, the horrors of each individual attack. It's about the systematic, the society-wide coordination that had to occur for this to happen and the psychological imperative behind it. We'll get into all of that. We'll also, of course, be talking about the Memorandum of Understanding between America and Iran. It's not a peace deal quite yet. It's another aspect of this Iran conflict. Sort of falls in one of these gray areas. It's not a war, but it's kind of a war. We have peace, but it's not really a peace. And we have ceasefire, but that doesn't mean that we cease firing or anything. It's all a little bit wonky when it comes to the war in Iran, and the Memorandum of Understanding is no different. We do have some details from it leaked out of Bloomberg, and I'll bring you those. The interesting thing about being gone for a week and not getting to cover all the stories and actually being up in the mountains and not really having sufficient internet to even keep up with things, when I would check in, it was interesting because so many of the stories that broke over this week were in fact things that we've covered sometimes for years. And so it's tomorrow's news today, right? The Alex Jones Network, classic InfoWars saying tomorrow's news today, that it's so true. It's kind of ridiculous. And I have to, like, if you watch us every day and then you go online and you see, you know, these headlines about something being revealed, like, it must be strange, because it's strange for me to look at this and go, yeah, I talked endlessly about this a week ago or a month ago or 4 years ago or whatever it is. And now it's a big blaring headline and everybody's learning about it. We got to get more people to watch. We would be so ahead of the curve on all of this stuff. Things like in the rape gang inquiry report, the fact that care homes, orphanages in the UK, were essentially being treated as brothels. That story was originally broke originally out of Rotherham all the way back in like 2014. We've been covering it ever since. It's nice to see everybody truly comprehend and understand and really come to terms with what we're actually dealing with here. None of this is new to us, though. We have known this forever. Even the Memorandum of Understanding and the end of the Iran War. It was a couple weeks ago, I was reading an article on air, on the War Room, about Goldman Sachs, talking about how basically mid-June was the longest that this conflict could go on without absolutely catastrophic and devastating domino effects that destroyed the world economy. So I don't know if we can find the cliff. I mean, we do so much stuff. It's like it all just gets lost in the mix. But probably a month ago, I sat here and went, oh, okay, so the war is going to be over mid-June. You can put your money on that, because that's what Goldman Sachs did. And what do you know? Midway through June, you get a Memorandum of Understanding. Because when it comes to the Iran war, there's sort of the unstoppable force versus the immovable object. The immovable object in this case is the catastrophic economic effects of shutting down the Strait of Hormuz for so long, and essentially the greatest Economist in America, decided that mid-June was the deadline, that things had to get back to normal by the end of June, or else they would suffer. So, you know, you can't let the banks. So we can't have Goldman Sachs suffering, after all. We cannot let BlackRock and Vanguard dip, even in the slightest. So, of course, the war would be over by mid-June. So there's the economic reality that's undeniable and unavoidable. It has to end at this point, or else it's not just a pointless conflict in which we've gained nothing and spent enormous amounts of money and energy and lives to achieve nothing. It becomes like the destruction of the entire world, a feedback loop of depression that would render America totally destroyed. So that's sort of the that would be the immovable object. The unstoppable force is the Greater Israel Project, and not just the desire of Israel, but the necessity for Israel to destroy Iran, to use the impetus that started on October 7th, 2023, to carry that through all the way to utter destruction of Iran, to leave it totally destroyed like another Syria or another Iraq. Another place, the only acceptable outcome of this, according to Israel, is an Iran that is incapable of responding to to being attacked. That's the only possible positive and really existential result for them. Yeah, here it is. Goldman team led by Dan Stroyven said in a note published late Monday that it now expects exports to the Strait of Hormuz to normalize around pre-war levels around the end of July rather than August. Although given the report acknowledges there's still risks to this assumption, in part owing to the trend of the last few months when President Trump made repeated claims on the cusp of a deal only for negotiations to stutter and the crisis to continue. This one's a little bit different. This one is different. There is the economic reality that this cannot go much longer. We have to basically accept where we are now and make the deal while we can. And people are saying the deal is worse than the deal that Obama originally made. That's a headline on Drudge Report. We'll get into whether it is or not. But the reality for Israel is that they have turned everybody against them here in America, especially the younger generations. It might not be this go around, but within 10 years, as frankly, the boomers die off and the, you know, reality, the truth about Israel continues to break through the mainstream media cordon, the mainstream media dam, you know, keeping back the truth. Social media circumvents that. They're doing everything they can to buy up social media to silence that. I think that's a main part of the digital ID push as well. We'll get into all of that, but they are going to be destroyed if they don't become a superpower that is the sole superpower in the Middle East. That's the ultimate goal. That's what they've been pushing for ever since the attack by Hamas on Israel and the genocide in Gaza. They've destroyed their reputation. They've made that gamble on the bet that they would be able to take out Iran with Donald Trump using American forces, take out Iran, and then it would all be worth it. And then, okay, everybody hates Israel, but who cares? They're a monolithic superpower in the Middle East. And this is what Benjamin Netanyahu has said. This is what Israelis of all, you know, stripes in positions of power have said is their goal. And again, it's not just a goal. It's like they've gone all in. They've bet the house on this. If they don't get it, if they don't destroy Iran, if we go back to a situation in which Iran is able to build up and is actually, you know, get some of the sanctions removed and its economy gets to really, you know, expand even more. And I mean, it's unacceptable. So I don't think Israel is going to accept this. The reaction from the Israeli firsters out there is absolute outrage. And, you know, they're apoplectic. It's actually kind of hilarious. They're the panickins now. They're the panickins. They're no longer MAGA. They all hate Trump all of a sudden, which is typical and, you know, obvious that this was always going to happen, that they were going to basically criticize you for daring to suggest that Trump was making a mistake here and basically say that you have to submit to Trump's will and their will unquestioningly, or else you're a panickin. You're a leftist. You might as well be AOC if you disagree with their approach on Israel. And now suddenly they're the ones criticizing Trump and saying what a bad thing this deal is and how he's betrayed them. And they basically turned on him completely, which was always the predictable outcome. And I don't understand how Trump didn't know that, or maybe he did and is doing it anyway. I mean, we'll go through it. But essentially, Israel cannot let this stand. They cannot have peace with Iran. and they're not going to. So no matter what, if this memorandum of understanding becomes a honest to God peace deal, it's going to be, no matter what, a pause. It's just a pause at the end of the day, because the tactical reality of Israel is that up to this point, they have spent all of their reputation overseas. They've spent all of their goodwill. They've ruined their reputation worldwide. And what have they gotten in return? A little sliver of Gaza, a little chunk of Syria, taken over for the time, you know, a couple villages in Lebanon. Is that worth it? Do you think that's worth it? It will only be worth it if Israel is entirely in their hands, including Gaza and the West Bank, if they get the Golan Heights, and if they get the entire, you know, bottom half of Lebanon, and Iran is rendered completely impotent and incapable of responding to Israeli aggression. Like Syria, you know, Israel would routinely bomb Syria, and Syria had no ability to hit them back. That's the ideal condition that Israel wants to see every other country in the region rendered down to, and they're not going to stop till that's the case. So that hasn't changed. That into the economic reality of the Strait of Hormuz destroying the world economy, which, as I always said when it came to the war in Iran, was kind of the point. I don't even think it was necessarily an unfortunate side effect. I think it may have been a primary driver. So really, the only question at this point is, why did we do this? What was the point of the Iran war? And when should we have stopped? When should Israel have stopped pursuing this course of action? Because you could go back to, like, maybe a reasonable thing would be like maybe 4 days after the war started. Maybe 4 days after the war started, it was supposed to be a 4-day adventure. The idea was that there would be a decapitation strike and Iran would fall apart and whoever was left would be desperate to make a deal with America. And it would be a 4-day in and out Venezuela, you know, Maduro capture style operation. When it was obvious that that wasn't the case, that that failed, that the Iranians had actually prepared for that and had made contingency plans that made such a plan inviable, maybe that would have been a good time to stop. Maybe if we'd stopped 4 days in, we'd be in a hell of a lot better position than we're in right now. We certainly wouldn't have lost $100 billion worth of equipment in the intervening 90 plus days. You could go a little bit further, you know, maybe if we hadn't, or if Israel hadn't murdered the negotiators in the early weeks of the Iran conflict, we could have had a better agreement, but unfortunately they did. So we didn't. They did murder them. We didn't get the deal. So here we are. I would say you could go even further back. I would say the time to have slammed the brakes on probably would have been around like October 9th, 2023. It should have been in the days after October 7th that the Israeli population, the American population, the world media should have pumped the brakes a little bit and said, well, hold on. What actually happened here? And is this actually an existential threat that demands our immediate lashing out militarily against everybody and committing horrible war crimes against innocent people? Like, maybe we should have pumped the brakes then. And so, well, what's actually going on here? Who's actually responsible for this? And how do we actually prevent it from ever happening in the future? Because maybe if that had happened, maybe if there had been a little bit of patience, been a little bit of thoughtfulness involved, maybe people would have understood, okay, yes, the attack on October 7th was bad, but it was also allowed to happen by Netanyahu. It was also impossible to have occurred without the complicity of the IDF in the region, allowing the invasion to happen, the stand down order, followed by the Hannibal directive, in which most of the death occurred with helicopter gunships, you know, killing everybody at the Nova Fest, death tolls that were then attributed to Hamas and used to justify the invasion of Gaza, which still hasn't gone as planned. Hezbollah is still racking up wins against Israel. Hamas is still not even disarmed, let alone destroyed completely. Maybe all the way back then, if you could go back in time and choose a different life path, wouldn't it have been better? Wouldn't it have been the more desirable outcome to not sacrifice God only knows how many hundreds of thousands of people murdered in the last 2.5 years of conflict and the reputation overseas that has been destroyed and that will eventually inevitably lead to your destruction, because Israel exists entirely because of the protection of America. And once that goes away, once the people in America, a majority amount, no longer want to support Israel, Israel cannot exist on its own. Maybe it would have been better all the way back then to choose a different path. That different path is always available, and it looks like Trump is trying to take it, whether Israelis and pro-Israel Americans allow him to do that. I guess we'll wait and see. Mark Levin, not happy. Mark Levin is a complete panickin at this point. He's turned against Trump. He is the woke Reich. He basically is a leftist. He's AOC. And it's very sad to see. So it's not exactly, it's like, yeah, we took a week off, but it's like everything has unfolded exactly as we foresaw, because it's all kind of inevitable and obvious that Iran had made contingency plans to deal with the style of attacks that Benjamin Netanyahu convinced Trump to undertake, that they had the ability to close the Strait of Hormuz. It's like, I feel ridiculous for even saying it. It's like, of course they could close the Strait of Hormuz. Whoever thought they couldn't? So we'll get into what exactly the memorandum of understanding is. But I do want to say, I'll tell you one story from this week. I was out of town because my grandmother lives in a little town in Colorado. And my mom was on vacation with us, and she was walking around the block, said hello to my grandmother's neighbors, who are big fans of Alex Jones, big fans of the InfoWar. And, you know, they go up to my mom. Mom says, oh, you know, Harrison's coming in town. You know, you should come by and say hi. And the guy said, yeah, I just feel so bad that Alex is off the air now, that InfoWars is off the air. My mom had to tell him, like, he's not off the air. AlexJonesLive.com. It's AlexJonesLive.com. I know you've heard Alex say this a lot, but it was just another another instance of this. You gotta tell your friends. You gotta tell your neighbors. AlexJonesLive.com. AlexJonesLive.com. We are still on the air. You gotta go to Rumble. Rumble.com/TheAlexJonesShow. Or The Alex Jones Show Live. You've got to tell people that we're still on air, because people genuinely don't know. Some of our biggest fans don't even know. And I was talking to my dad about it, and he's like, well, are you doing like a big push on X? And the thing is, if you have X, you probably know where to find us. You're probably tuning in. Not everybody has X. A lot of our fans, you know, going to InfoWars.com may have been, you know, the only sort of connection they had to sort of this online political world. And that's been severed now that we've been forced to close down InfoWars. So we're trying to reestablish that connection, you know, relay these communication lines to our soldiers out there. Let them know. AlexJonesLive.com. AlexJonesLive.com. There are people out there. They don't know. Folks, you got to tell your boomer friends, your boomer neighbors. No offense, boomers. We love you. But what the heck? We're not off the air. We are still on the air. We are still in the fight. We are still just as powerful as we ever were. But we need you to spread the word. Tell your friends. Share the links. Please, we don't just say this for no reason. There are people out there that think that we're off the air. Please don't let them live in ignorance. TheAlexJonesStore.com is how you support us. We'll be right back on the other side. We'll get into this memorandum of understanding. We'll be joined by some great guests later to talk about the rape.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are listener and viewer supported. It's very simple. TheAlexJonesStore.com. You back us. You fund us. You are everything. And we bring you the very best products, the very best supplements, the very best water filtration systems, the widest selection of Patriot apparel, the very best knives, silver coins, you name it, so that you get a great product and empower yourself while at the same time empowering yourself and free humanity against the globalists. So, a lot of new things at TheAlexJonesStore.com. Look at these belts. They are super comfortable. They are incredible high quality. They are so durable. They'll last a lifetime. And the way they're designed is something special. So I paid like $75 a year or so ago for a similar belt. And I told Bigley, I like this type of belt. Why don't you get these? They got belts even better than the one I bought about a year ago that I love. And they're selling them for $39 right now. That is a big discount out of the gates. at theyellowshowstore.com. Premium nylon tactical belt. This is the premium nylon tactical belt available now at theyellowshowstore.com for only $39.99. It's built from heavy-duty nylon webbing with a smooth automatic ratchet buckle. No holes, no guessing, no too tight or too loose. You get a perfect micro-adjustable fit whether you're working, carrying, driving, sitting at your desk, or on the move. And we've got them in three editions. On the buckle is a little cross, a 1776 edition, and Alex Jones signature edition, making it original and special. It's all black, tactical, clean, durable, and built for everyday use. It's murdered out. It's off black. And right now it's only $39 at thealexjonesstore.com. They are premium. They look great. They have knocked it out of the park with this product. Get yours today, and also buy gifts for friends and family, and know you're fighting the tip of the spear in the fight against tyranny. Also, Bigley knocked it out. Highest rating, level with the carbon filters, beautiful, highest-grade stainless steel for lower price than other systems that aren't even as good. We're so proud of this. The first group sold out. More coming in about a week and a half. So get your order in now to make sure it's ahead of the line. Those are now available. This is platinum level, gravity-fed water filtration, and it makes this operation possible. Multi-tested by top companies to take out hundreds and hundreds of bad chemicals at non-detectable levels, the atrazine, the glyphosate, all of it. You should do this for your family. Do this for yourself. It's a big 3-gallon system. It's amazing. TheAlexJonesStore.com. And then we have the widest selection of Patriot apparel. Some of the designs are the best. Some of them are okay. I'll just be honest. Some of the designs I come up with are okay. But I came up with the concepts of these new shirts. Limited edition, 250th anniversary of America, July 4th, special edition. So it's sold through the middle of June, through July, and then we're not going to sell these T-shirts anymore. They look so good, they'll probably come up with another variant or something. But these are limited edition, Liberty or Death, 1776, 2026. They came up with that. I love it. The simple one I came up with, America, 250 years strong, nice, simple, clean, kind of got like a polo look to it. Look at that one, Destroying Tyranny since 1776, Gadsden flag on the Betsy Ross flag. I came up with that design. I'm really proud of these. They're very clean. You'll meet a lot of like-minded people wearing these. Praise the Lord and Pass the Ammunition. I designed that bad boy. They designed the 1776, 250 years of freedom. Oh, I love the one they designed with the brass knuckles, 1776 Free, Defund the Deep State. That's all their designs. America, Ride Fast, Live Free. They designed that. Ball caps as well, all limited edition. TheAlexJonesStore.com. And to keep us on the air, take action now. Big Brother hates it when you fund the tip of the spear. We'll be back. Stay with us.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance. Live from Austin, Texas, you're listening to The Alex Jones Show.
Welcome back, folks. This is The Alex Jones Show. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, sitting in for Alex today. We'll be joined by Frank Wright in the next hour. Carl Benjamin of the Locust Eaters, also known as Sargon of Akkad, joins us in the 2 o'clock hour, talked about the rape gang inquiry report that was published days ago and that lays out the true scale of horrors committed on the people of the UK by their own government, actually, using, of course, immigrants as the weapons of choice. But certainly the immigrants didn't get there on their own and didn't establish their own cover up networks on their own, in opposition to the British government. It was actually all part and parcel of the New World Order that was being created in the post-war Bretton Woods diversity drive that is still ruining lives to this day. We're going to get very much into that, but we're going to continue to talk about the memorandum of understanding between Iran and America that Donald Trump plans to sign on a mountaintop in Switzerland, apparently. Of course, this is not a full-fledged peace deal. And the headlines at AlexJonesLive.com. Trump says he will drop bombs if he doesn't like the final Iran peace deal. If they don't behave, we'll go right back to dropping bombs right smack in the middle of their heads, said President of the United States. And of course, we've seen this one before. We've seen this over and over again. 2 weeks ago, it was actually June 1st, I reposted it on my X because it's just ridiculous. For like weeks, every single week, it was the same thing. On Friday, we'd be inches away from a deal. We're so close. We're almost there. Then Israel would bomb Lebanon. Iran would respond. The whole thing would fall apart and we'd be back to square one. It's happened over and over and over again. This one feels a little bit different. There is the economic reality. That means that there is a very serious deadline that we're up against right now. There has to be a pause of some sort just to open up the strait and get the oil flowing and get the economy back on track. That's just a reality that is going to dictate the path that this takes, at least for the immediate future. But this is not over by a long shot, and it could very easily be derailed in a number of different ways. And that's sort of an interesting aspect of all of this that, again, we've been reporting on the entire time and the entire second Trump administration. We've been highlighting and illustrating and investigating this shadow war going on within the Trump administration, as well as without and sort of all over the place. But this, the constant meddling by Israel, the constant subversion by Israel, as half of Trump's administration seemed to not want to go to war with Iran and half of them did. And you had the Signalgate controversy and Mike Waltz coordinating with Netanyahu to undermine the negotiations with Trump in 2025. There has been an ongoing secondary conflict. We have our main conflict with Iran. The secondary conflict is the one with Israel that's keeping us in the war with Iran, that started the war with Iran in the first place. And that is, of course, using America to achieve the ends of Israel for no benefit to ourselves. And this continues. Israel requested a copy of the Memorandum of Understanding. They wanted to be involved in the negotiations and they were denied. Why were they denied even seeing the information? Because they would have leaked it, because it would have given them ammunition, would have given them the ability to find things they didn't like about it, blow it out of proportion, go to the media with it, and scuttle the whole thing from the outset. And the really dangerous thing that's happening right now is that Senator Tom Cotton and others are adding amendments and provisions to the, you know, latest big budget package, the NDAA, or basically any bill in the American Congress that has to be passed through, and they're tacking on these provisions to merge Israel with America militarily and at the intelligence level, meaning that if those provisions had passed previously, if those had already been in place and those bills had already gone through the process and been signed, then we would have had no ability to stop Israel from seeing the Memorandum of Understanding. We would have actually been compelled to give it to them because a provision of these bills being written by the likes of Tom Cotton are that we have to share everything we have with Israel. So, you know, if they'd gone back in time, they'd already established this, then we likely wouldn't be anywhere close to a memorandum of understanding right now. We would have been compelled to share intelligence with Israel that they would have used to destroy the negotiations in the same way that they murdered the negotiators the last couple of times that we've been close to getting a deal. Like, it's so strange that we have to try to negotiate peace in absolute secrecy, because if our greatest ally finds out who we're negotiating with or what we're negotiating, they will intervene and kill the negotiators or disrupt the negotiations. Why are we saddled with this? Why are we having to not just try to get out of a unconscionable and pointless and hugely damaging war that we chose to go into with Iran, while simultaneously trying to defend ourselves against the constant infiltration by our quote unquote greatest ally that got us into it in the first place? It's infuriating. I really can't go on much longer. And there is a great conflict brewing, because Israel is not interested in containing themselves to the provisions, the strictures of the Memorandum of Understanding as it's laid out now. It demands that Israel remove itself from Lebanon. They have no intention of doing that. This is coming to a head. And this will really be a test of Israeli influence here in America, a test of Donald Trump's priorities in this case. I would hate to see this whole thing fire up again. And I don't think that's possible right now. Maybe in the next couple of months, it'll reignite, or maybe there will be a giant false flag attack that will get us right back into it. don't underestimate the Israelis and their desperation and their feeling that this is an existential issue. That's why they're freaking out. That's why you have Telegram groups and, you know, X groups of Israelis who are cursing Donald Trump and saying this is a total betrayal and this is, you know, the worst thing anybody's ever done. The reason it has gone to that level immediately, it always seems to. It always seems that every crisis is an existential one to which there's no time to stop and think. We have to act immediately. Don't consider anything. We have to bomb Gaza to smithereens. Don't look into who's actually responsible for October 7th. There's no time. It's an emergency. This constant, you know, high stress environment allows you, you know, some freedom of action when you're the ones causing the stress in the population, invoking the fear response, overriding the logic faculties of your people, and forcing them into positions that they would otherwise avoid. They have to do it. They see this as existential because to them, it kind of is. It actually is. So what's gone so wrong? How have we gone so off the rails? And what was the point of this? And when it all goes sideways, who do you think they're going to blame? Who do you think they're already blaming to a large degree? We're the ones who said we shouldn't go to war with Iran. We're the ones who said this whole thing was a bad idea, that this was ridiculous, that it's a betrayal of Donald Trump's campaign promises over and over and over and over again. And this proves we're exactly right. This proves you should have been listening to us the entire time. This means that people like me, who were routinely and still are accused of anti-Semitism for my stances of Israel, we should have been listened to the entire time for the sake of Israel, because they're in a worse position than they were on October 8th, 2023. And if they had not engaged in a genocide, if they had not forced America into war with Iran, they would be in a better position now. But anybody saying that was accused of anti-Semitism, of being a Muslim agent, a Qatari agent, and not just ignored, but shouted down and demonized. Well, maybe you'll listen now, but probably not. So we'll just comment on it and keep being right. What else are we supposed to do? President Trump told reporters on the sideline of the G7 summit in France that the pending U.S.-Iran memorandum of understanding is, quote, not final, and warned that, quote, if he doesn't like it, we'll go back to shooting at them. If I don't like it, the MOU, we'll go back to shooting at them, dropping bombs on their head, Trump said. Trump repeated, if they don't behave, we'll go right back to dropping bombs right smack in the middle of their head. Great. But that hasn't worked, has it? But that actually hasn't achieved anything, has it? Actually, it was never going to achieve anything because there was always the necessity of boots on the ground, and that was always obvious. And Trump has, to his credit, avoided that ultimate, you know, dedication. He has not actually sent in large amounts of troops that would be necessary to do anything that Israel wants us to do, to go in and seize the nuclear material or like actually occupy the country or anything of the sort. It would require American boots on the ground, not just boots on the ground, American boots on the ground, because Israeli boots on the ground, well, you can ask Hezbollah how effective those are and how numerous they are. Not very. So it requires American boots on the ground. Trump has avoided that, but that was always the point. But without doing that, then none of this matters, because you can't bomb a country like Iran into submission. That has never worked ever. Ever. And again, we can go all the way back to, I mean, this year has been crazy. You understand, it was like January 1st of this year that we did the raid on Maduro. We captured him out of Venezuela. And you understand that that had to do with denying supplies, first of all, to Hezbollah, who was tied in with Venezuela, as well as to stop an alternative source of energy so that the shutting down of the strait would be as painful as possible. Iran says the deal to end the war with the U.S. requires Israel to withdraw from Lebanon. I don't think they're going to do that. I mean, things are about to get weird. Things are about to get weird because Israel's not going to stop bombing Lebanon. The question is, if Iran responds to that, which according to the memorandum of understanding, they're kind of legally obligated to do, or at least allowed to do, right? If Israel keeps demolishing civilian buildings in Beirut, Iran is going to respond to that and probably bomb Tel Aviv. Then the question becomes, what does America do? Does America then say, well, you know, Iran bombed Tel Aviv, they've broken the ceasefire, we're right back at it? 6th, and the strait remains closed. The economic situation teeters ever closer to the brink. I don't know. I just don't know. Somebody on X commented, well, you know, Israel is bombing Lebanon. So, well, that's kind of an assumed reality. They're going to keep bombing Lebanon. They are not interested in being constrained by America. They are not concerned about what's best for America or America's interest. They are obsessed with killing everybody in Lebanon. So that's what they're going to keep doing. The real question comes is if Iran responds, whether we perceive that as a breaking of the peace deal, which we shouldn't, according to the strictures and the stipulations of the MOU. But we've seen Trump do this exact thing over and over and over again. Now, however, we are so much closer to that economic abyss. It's an interesting set of incentives pushing and pulling from every side. U.S. President Donald Trump has opted to end the wars in Iran and Lebanon long before Israel's goals were accomplished. This story is from AOL.com. Netanyahu, Israel's arch survivor, set to face voter fury over Iran deal. They say he's chosen to end the wars in Iran and Lebanon long before Israel's goals were accomplished. And Netanyahu's boast in March that, quote, we are changing the face of the Middle East looks increasingly empty, like they've increasingly failed. Already facing corruption allegations, domestic political controversies and criticisms over security failings in the October 7th, 2023 Hamas attack on Israel, we will now face voters' judgment. He will now face voters' judgment in the handling of wars and Israel's relationship with the United States, its most important ally. And this was entirely Netanyahu. I mean, let's not beat around the bush. He was the prime minister during October 7th. He allowed October 7th to happen, despite having tons of intelligence that it was going on, despite the rapid response of the IDF and the Israeli military being able to easily handle such an incursion, except they were ordered to stand down for 6 hours, and then the Hannibal Directive was invoked, and then the genocide in Gaza occurred, and then, year over year, Netanyahu in particular pressured Donald Trump to first do the 12-day war and then to try to do a Venezuela-style coup on Iran in January of this year, and then actually came about in February, late February. It totally failed. And yet they had no contingency plan. They had no plan B. It's like, we'll bomb them. We'll decapitate the regime. We have this historic opportunity. And he tricks Trump into going along with this on faulty intelligence. And now they're doing everything they can to keep him in it. It's not that complicated. It is that despicable and infuriating. From the Telegraph, the 14-point Iran deal in full and how it favors Tehran. Leaked document details Iran's hard-won gains in negotiations with Washington. High on a mountaintop in Switzerland on Friday, U.S. and Iranian officials will sign off on a deal to end a costly war. The 14-point plan may fall short of a full-blown peace accord, but Donald Trump and his team believe it will usher in a period of stability in the Middle East and create a new positive dynamic in the relationship between Washington and Iran. Neither side has officially shared the contents of the Memorandum of Understanding, MOU, which is due to be released after the signing ceremony. However, a credible version has been leaked and was first published by Bloomberg. The document paves the way for a ceasefire and the reopening of the Strait of Hormuz, but it offers Iran much, much more than that. The Telegraph can break down the finer points in each article of the arrangement. Number one, the Islamic Republic of Iran and the United States, together with their allies in the current war, declare upon the signing of the Memorandum of Understanding an immediate and permanent end to the war on all fronts, including Lebanon, and undertake that from now on they will not launch any hostile actions against each other and will refrain from the threat or use of force against each other. The final agreement will confirm the provisions of this article and the remaining articles. The first element of the deal is a ceasefire between not only Iran and the U.S., but Israel and Hezbollah in Lebanon. This was a major precondition for Iran. However, this has proved to be a stumbling block in recent weeks for talks because of an apparent refusal by Benjamin Netanyahu, Israel's prime minister, to halt attacks on the Iranian-backed militia, by which, of course, they mean the civilians of Lebanon. And again, you know, Trump, I don't know, do we have the video of Trump talking about, he's like, you know, you don't have to bomb a whole apartment building just to get one Hezbollah guy. And it's like, does Trump think that they're actually trying to kill Hezbollah guys? They're not. And they admit that they're not. I mean, the stated policy of Israel is that for every drone that Hezbollah sends, they're just going to, like, kill 10 civilians. It's a strategy of terror. They don't know how to deal with the threat of Hezbollah drones. And so the only thing that they can think to do is to just basically punish civilians, to try to pressure civilians to be mad at Hezbollah for continuing to send drones, because every time they send drones, Israel demolishes a building with people inside. So let's go to this video. This is Donald Trump speaking at the G7 summit. I believe this video is from yesterday. Do we have the audio of that, guys?
He's done an amazing job of pulling it together. He's not a Boy Scout, but he's done an amazing job of pulling it together. And he is very good with Hezbollah, does not like them. And I'll tell you what, Israel's fighting Hezbollah too long, and too many people are being killed. And you don't have to knock down an apartment house every time you're looking for somebody, because there are a lot of people in those apartment houses, and they're not all Hezbollah, that I can tell you. And I suggested to Israel to let Syria take care of Hezbollah, because to be honest with you, I think they'd do a better job of doing it. And I didn't like Syria. I didn't like where 2 hours before we're signing the agreement that there was an attack in Lebanon, in Beirut. It wasn't like in the southern side, and you know, it was in Beirut. I did not like that. I let them know that. I didn't like it, not at all. But I think that Syria, and he's pulled that country together amazingly quickly.
So again, I mean, and we told you this was always the plan. This has been the plan forever. This occurred in 2006 already. They failed to, you know, get rid of Hezbollah with Israeli incursions under George W. Bush and Condoleezza Rice. They sort of gave the green light to Israel to try. They were unimpressed with Israel's ability to make these incursions into Lebanon. And so they started ISIS. And so they created ISIS to try to destroy Hezbollah. And Hezbollah was one of the main factions that stopped the rise of ISIS. Of course, that since then, they've overthrown Bashar al-Assad, installed an ISIS commander into Syria, and now want to use the Syrian army's forces, because the Israeli army is incapable of, you know, sizable ground incursions of any sort, because they're too precious. The Israelis are just too precious. So they need to send in the hordes, the mobs of the Islamic goblins to, you know, take over Hezbollah in the meantime. This was always the plan. It is an extremely would be an extremely dangerous development for the people of Lebanon to have this pincer attack of Israel in the south and Syrian forces coming in from the north. But regardless, Hezbollah has been holding their own and actually achieving pretty sizable strategic successes against Israel, including ones that are like truly mind-blowing. I mean, according to reports, Hezbollah took down an Israeli drone at 7,000 meters in the air. That's like 4 miles in the air. Hezbollah is a civilian militia. They're not a state. How does a civilian militia take down a drone that's 4 miles in the air? With extremely sophisticated technology that Israel is having trouble contending with. That's a giant aspect of this. The thing is, the illusion can exist for so long until it runs into reality. That's going to be actually kind of a theme that goes into the Rape Gang Inquiry Report, because they can say whatever they want about Iran. They can make all the claims they want. When push comes to shove, Iran has and had the capability to defend themselves, and it all kind of falls apart when the missiles start flying. The whole illusion starts to crumble when the bombs start falling, and all of the manipulation that can occur in the information realm sort of means nothing when the fist is hitting the face. Like, it's just, there's a come to Jesus moment happening, I think, with the powers that be. Trump and Netanyahu on Israel, we are the big partner and he is the small partner. Trump said that about Israel. We're not acting like it. We haven't been acting like it. Again, I genuinely think we are coming to some sort of major conclusion of this. Either it happens again, Israel again is unrestrained and able to bomb Lebanon with impunity, and then any response from Iran will be treated as a violation of the terms of the MOU and the war will start up again. Or America has to actually restrain Iran, just like Joe Kent said when he resigned in protest of the war in Iran, saying the only way to get any sort of peace, the only way any memorandum of understanding or ceasefire or peace deal ever has any hope of existing in the Middle East is if America uses our power to restrain Israel. put severe restraints on Israel. I would want us to even sanction or in some other way occupy Israel, because they clearly cannot be trusted, certainly not when they feel as though they have a blank check by America, a shield of America to do whatever they want to whoever they want, whenever they want. The Islamic Republic of Iran and the United States undertake to negotiate and reach a final agreement within a maximum period of 60 days, extendable by mutual consent. Immediately upon the signing of this memorandum of understanding, the United States lift the naval blockade and prevent any interference or obstruction against the Islamic Republic of Iran and restore traffic within a maximum of 30 days to its full capacity. So no matter how you try to spin this, it's a loss for America. We are in a worse position at the end of this, as a consequence of this MOU, than we were before the war. This has failed. It has failed utterly and completely and ridiculously. They are going to control the Strait. They are going to make a lot of money off the Strait. They are going to be given hundreds of billions of dollars of investment as a consequence of having to rebuild because of the destruction that we wrought, and we have achieved absolutely nothing but embarrassing ourselves, getting thousands and thousands of people killed, including a bunch of kids at a girls' school in the early hours, and, you know, ruining our ability to negotiate anything ever because we keep killing the negotiators and then violating agreements, totally destroying our own reputation overseas. This has been nothing but bad. I'm not saying that we were right the entire time to, you know, boost ourselves, but because we're going to be right in the future, and for the love of God, why won't people listen to us? Why is it so hard to find people that can recognize obvious reality? Why were we, the Alex Jones Network, the only ones, it seemed, who were able to recognize that obviously all of this would inevitably happen no matter what? The Strait of Hormuz closing down, Iran responding in kind and not being taken down because of a decapitation strike. This was obvious from the beginning. Anybody telling you otherwise is lying. And that's, to me, one of the important parts of having the Alex Jones Network, Alex Jones Live, in operation, because they can say, hey, we all thought this was going to go great. Nobody knew what Iran was capable of doing. Nobody knew what the negative outcome would be. It's kind of hard to make that case when we're on air and making the opposite case over and over and over again and being right about all of it. We get back on the other side, we'll be joined by Frank Wright. Support us by going to thealexjonesstore.com. That's thealexjonesstore.com. Make yourself a purchase and keep us on air and trying desperately to right this ship.
Hi, folks. Doc Bigley here. And today we're going to get to know our H2O. Billy, what kind of water do you drink?
Why, tap water, of course. Ma says it keeps my teeth sparkly white.
I'm sorry to say it, Billy, but your mother is either plain ignorant or worse, a communist. Let me explain.
Tap water used to be safe to drink, but communist subversives in our government introduced fluoride into our nation's tap under the guise of dental health, when in reality, fluoride lowers your IQ, calcifies your pineal gland, and makes you susceptible to anti-capitalist mind viruses.
So you're telling me I'm a sap if I drink tap?
Yes, you are, Billy. Yes, you are.
But don't despair. We've found a solution. Follow me.
I'd like to tell you a tale of two frogs.
Frog number one has only ever drank unfiltered tap water, chock full of fluoride. Observe him listening to satanic music, abusing substances, and engaging in other perversions.
Look, Doc, they're trying to play leapfrog. They're pretty bad at it, though.
Avert your eyes, Billy. Let's continue.
Meanwhile, frog number two has only ever drank water that has been filtered for fluoride and other impurities. What a happy frog family.
Spill the secret, Doc. How do you get rid of the communist poisons?
With the new water filter system from the AlexJonesStore.com.
Say, Doc, may I have a glass?
Why, certainly. Well, that's just swell. No water in the water filter. Listen, I'm not mad at the crew, but I asked for real water in here 30 minutes ago and never got it.
Crew's in trouble again.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
like someone's trying to destroy England. It's literally like they've got a concerted effort to destroy England, and they're getting away with it.
Yeah, and it's, what happens over there?
It's really crazy. It's really crazy to watch. Because the mass immigration's not an accident. It's on, it, if I was going to destroy a country, I would do it exactly the way they're doing it.
There's Keir Starmer, head of the UK, whenever he goes out in public. And that was Joe Rogan stating the obvious, that this is an attack, that mass immigration is an attack. Which is one of the interesting things about the rape gang inquiry report that we'll be covering this hour with Frank Wright, is that it routinely claims that the UK government is failing in its mission, which obviously they're the ones with the responsibility to protect the English people. In that regard, they are failing, you could say that. But their purpose is the destruction of the English people. You know, it's like, it's like if, you know, I put on a plumber's uniform and knock on your door and say, hey, I'm here from the city. There's a big leak we gotta fix. I need access to your house. And then once I'm inside your house, I pull out a gun and put it to your head and rob you. And then afterwards, you're like, he didn't even fix the leak. What the heck? The guy didn't even fix. It's like he was never going to. He never wanted to fix. I was never going to fix a leak. That was a trick. That was a lie. That was the position I assumed to get access to you so I could abuse you. Right? Do you get it? The UK government is designed to do this. Its purpose has been to destroy the English people since 1948 and the British Nationality Act that opened up for mass immigration, followed by Tony Blair, Larry Ellison's understudy in 1997, really getting the mass immigration engine roaring. It's not that they don't care. It's not that they're failing to protect the people of the UK. They are a hostile occupying force that is trying to destroy the people of the UK in such a way that it can happen without causing an uprising. They don't want to outwardly attack the people of the UK because then you might get backlash. You want to subtly, carefully, and over decades diminish and ultimately destroy the people of the UK without them ever waking up to the reality of what's happening and actually fighting back. And that's actually going to be a key part of the rape gang inquiry that I haven't seen anybody else cover. A lot of people are pointing to sort of the most egregious and horrifying examples of abuse from this, and they are beyond imagination. They are truly horrifying beyond comprehension. But even more important to that, to me, are things like the fact that every single instance in which the rape gangs were stopped at any point, it's because armed men showed up to stop them. Regular dudes, the uncles of the victims, showed up, and then it stopped. That's the only thing they fear. Let's go down to clip number 25. This is a caller to a British radio station or a TV station earlier today.
They're not listening. The political class are not listening. These people who are coming over here illegally, they're rapists, terrorists. They're coming over here. It's literally like putting a wolf in a sheep field. You are giving them a target-rich environment. You haven't vetted them. You've done nothing. All you've done is dump them in a place where they can wreak havoc. Where they come from, guess what? There's no law. If they can do what literally whatever they like. They come over here. There's lawyers. Of course, taxpayer funded. They get a nice cushy home, running water, Sky TV, gym memberships, bus passes. They can literally go where they want and create havoc. And when they do, the people that foisted them upon us, guess what? They say, don't get upset. Don't do anything. Don't go out and cause unrest. Well, I'll tell you what, mate. Stop reaping, then you might not have to sow it, because this country is absolutely on the edge. They cannot take much more of people getting stabbed, raped, blown up, you name it, you foisted it upon us for the last 25, 30 years, ever since Blair said, I'm going to rub your noses in it. Well, guess what? What goes round comes round, and I think the political class have got a very, very, very big smack on the nose coming.
Well, they better. They better, because what this rape gang inquiry report reveals is the wholesale corruption of the entire British establishment. It all needs to burn, in my opinion. And these people need to pay the ultimate price. We'll be back on the other side to discuss how that'll happen.
The info war is not gone. It has been reborn. AlexJonesLive.com is the new site to find the next step in the InfoWar. Articles, video reports, live streams, breaking news. It's all on AlexJonesLive.com. We need you to be the Paul Revere's and share the links. You can also find us on X at Real Alex Jones and on Rumble at rumble.com/The Alex Jones Show Live. And don't forget to download the app. Go to alexjonesapp.com. The fight continues. If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
AlexJonesLive.com. We've only just begun to fight.
The Alex Jones Show. Because there is a war on for your mind.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is the Alex Jones Show. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, sitting in for Alex today. We're talking about the Rape Gang Inquiry Report published days ago by Rupert Lowe and the Restore Party. I believe at least they were the biggest proponents and pushers of this. And it is just as horrifying as you can possibly, probably more horrifying than you can possibly imagine. And this should be, this should represent a watershed moment in the UK as the true scale and scope of what has occurred comes to light. This cannot pass without justice being achieved. And I want to try to figure out how we achieve that justice, if that's even possible, how we got to this point. And I'm very happy to have Frank Wright here to discuss this with me. You can follow him on X at Frank Writer. That's W-R-I-G-H-T-E-R and frankwriter.com. Frank, thank you so much for coming on today. I assume that you have had a chance to look through the Rape Gang Inquiry Report. What are your initial thoughts, your first blush at reading the compendium of horrors that has been published?
I've never read anything more harrowing in my life, and it honestly defies description. I think it's, as Mr. Downs has said, it is your patriotic duty to read this report, because it reveals a crime on a scale and a timescale so vast that it really has no name. Even in, if you can imagine for a second that we've seen piecemeal reports of this going on for decades, but at no time has there been an effort to bring together the testimony of the victims and clear evidence that this could not have taken place except permissioned by successive governments and indeed the state. This is a damning document, which it obviously concludes with a demand for the maximum justice.
And what that would even look like is hard to say. But, I, you know, the important thing I think to understand is that this wasn't a fluke. This wasn't an accident. This wasn't the UK government trying their best and failing. You have examples like Keir Starmer in this is accused of basically presiding over 13,000 instances of childhood rape where he gave a warning letter and basically allowed the perpetrators to go free. Now he's been rewarded with becoming the prime minister. I mean, that's not an accident. He, of course, also was involved in the cover-up with Jimmy Savile. I mean, this is an issue with the UK establishment that goes far beyond just incompetence. This is a deliberate structure that has been created after World War II, sort of starting with the British Nationality Act, as denoted here, and just to read some of the brief introduction of this, just giving people an idea of what we're dealing with. Police forces ignored repeated reports, criminalized victims instead of perpetrators, destroyed evidence, and allowed known rapists to walk free on bail. Social care services undermined protective parents, placed children in trafficking hubs inside children's homes, like the orphanages were actually operating like brothels, which is absolutely horrifying. But like you said, we've known this. You know, there's a report in 2014. That this was the case in a place like Rotherham. But there's something different about hearing these horrors one after another after another. The Rape Gang Inquiry Report is basically there's a name and it's what's happened to that person over their life. And it's just one after another after another. Sometimes it's the victim. Sometimes it's a parent of the victim trying desperately to get the British government to do something about what's going on to their children. And instead, they're the ones who are demonized. They're the ones who are criminalized. And some of the quotes out of this, where a social service worker tells a parent who's knows that their child is being trafficked, and they say, well, this is just the blessings of diversity. You should be happy that they're being introduced to another culture. I mean, it's beyond description. I kind of don't even know where to begin with this. How do you think it got this bad? Like, how far back do we need to go to really find the seed of this poison fruit?
Well, it was Rupert Lowe MP who decided to create this inquiry. And the reason why he had to do this, and it was led in chief by Sammy Woodhouse, who is described as a survivor activist, so a former victim of what has been described over 10 years ago as the industrial scale rape of British children. The reason why it was necessary for Rupert Lowe and Restore to put this inquiry together is obviously because the British establishment refuses to even look at the issue in any serious manner. If you look at what has happened, if you look at the report, it says the first instance of what could be creditably described as a rape gang of foreign origin was first reported in 1955. The rape gang inquiry then goes on to say that the problem at scale was enormously magnified following the pro-immigration policies of Tony Blair's 1997 government. And I would like to remind you that between 1997 and 2024, according to the British government's own statistics, a minimum of 18.5 million people came to the United Kingdom. That's only the ones they counted. So these migrationist policies have been undertaken deliberately and against the will of every elected government since 1997, which were all elected on promises to either limit or reverse mass migration. So it is important to note that the environment which has permissioned these crimes and indeed prohibited their mention from accusations of racism has been going on for decades, and that's successive governments and indeed organs of the British state, including the judiciary, the police, the NGOs, schools, care homes, social services, and so on. There have been repeated attempts throughout this timescale by individuals to alert the public and the state to the problem. For example, the Labour MP Sarah Champion said in 2015 that there could have been up to a million victims, child victims, of, as she said, the industrial-scale rape of our children. The Labour MP Anne Cryer, who is the MP for Keighley, if I recall correctly, also pointed out that rape gangs of predominantly Pakistani origin were conducting this terrible trade in the most innocent of our human lives openly and for years and tried to get something done. If you go back even further, you can see people like Nick Griffin were actually prosecuted for suggesting this was taking place. And the reason why these people are silenced, demonized, and prosecuted is because it is in fact true. And it has been true for decades. And this is the reason why you have to see an independent inquiry set up by Rupert Lowe, largely funded by Restore supporters as well, with some cooperation from some sitting MPs, but has been almost uniformly ignored by the establishment press and media. And that is because this report clearly demonstrates that these crimes on this scale could not have taken place, and they continue to take place. They could not have happened without the collusion, knowledge, and indeed permission of the authorities that are supposed to be here to protect the British people from precisely these crimes. It is an indictment of the rotten state of Britain.
It is, absolutely. And just give people an idea who haven't read this. When you read it, you get this sense, you get this understanding that this is like an economy. There are millions of people engaged in this. There is absolutely no way that this could have occurred without the knowledge and active participation of the people in power, whether it's the people running the care homes who basically treated the little girls like prostitutes, or the cops who often, when called to a situation, would look at a 12-year-old girl and say, well, she's just a prostitute, which it like blows my mind. It's like, what does that even mean? A 12-year-old girl, oh, we're not going to do anything because she's a prostitute? Like, it's stuff like that, that you go, okay, you have to find out who made that policy, because it's not a coincidence that in every single case all over the country that that's the response from the police. That's not a coincidence, I don't think. I think they were trained to think that. I mean, training had to occur to have all of these people respond in exactly the same way, right? Like, we have to trace this back not just to bad apples taking advantage of the power that they were in, but like, why were they trained to think of it this way? Who instructed the police that here's the people that we actually pursue justice and here's the people that we write off and ignore? I mean, this is beyond systemic, and it has created an economy where entire populations in the UK seem to do this as their job. They come, they kidnap white girls, and then that is their source of income. Then they, you know, lend them out for a couple pounds a night. You get 15, 20 men. That's the way they make a living. Maybe they buy drugs and are trading drugs off of that. I mean, it is a criminal enterprise that has been manufactured by the British establishment. It's, again, it's hard to even put into words how this has occurred and how wide scale this has been. What could you possibly do to rein this back in rather than, you know, like overthrow the entire government? Because reading this inquiry report seems like the entire government top to bottom was in on it. What do y'all do at this point?
Well, the inquiry, I think quite reasonably concludes with a statement saying that this is the first phase. The first phase is basically naming the scale of the problem, listening to the voices of the victims, showing how this could have happened, and it could have only happened with, if not the participation, then the permission of the relevant authorities in the state. And it says that we must seek the maximum justice, not just for the perpetrators, but also for the officials whose action or inaction permitted this to continue over decades. And I would stress once again, it is continuing. And the reason why this inquiry has happened, and the reason why it is now, well, it's extremely well researched, why it is a reliable account and just the beginning, if you like, of a long overdue procedure towards justice, towards the rebalancing of the rottenness of our state, some justice for the victims, and the halting of the organized rape of our children, which is what this is. The reason this is happening is because people have come together to try and right a profound wrong done against our people and the most innocent of them. The reason why I'm speaking to you today in this situation is, again, thanks to the selfless dedication of other people than myself to try and get this message out to the widest possible audience. It's thanks to Herman of Vox Populi Media that I've got a broadcast signal to speak to you. Why is he doing this? Why has he gone out of his way to do this? Why have people given their money to the inquiry to make sure that it was written at all? Why have people offered their time? Why have some of the victims gone through the intense trauma of reliving some of the most horrendous things I've ever had to read? That's because if we do not bring these crimes to the widest possible audience, then the culture of silence, which has been created by the liberal state around these crimes, will continue, and those crimes themselves will carry on. If you look at how these things took place and how they were permissioned, you will see that time and again, parents who complained about their children being raped were not only intimidated, but sometimes even arrested by the police. Children in so-called care homes were often offered to their rapists. Children who had been raped were given back to the situation in which they had been raped, in some cases collected by them. There was no attempt whatsoever to protect them. In some cases, the police described them as kind of sexually available or dirty little slags. These are children, and slag is a British slang term for someone who is sexually promiscuous without discrimination. This is how children were described. Now, when you understand that the authorities who are supposed to protect you, prosecute the law, take your allegations seriously, actually helped your rapist rape you again, you realize how deep the rot goes. And so how can this have happened? There are numerous cases, too many to call to memory, where you find out that certain local authorities or police forces or media figures were aware of the problem in one town or other. Yet they refused to publicize it because they said it would be inflammatory. It would create racial tension. It would fuel the so-called far right. It would fuel accusations of racism. And so the primary virtue of the system which has governed us since the post-war consensus is not to be racist. And if that's the only cardinal sin in this system, then you can see the degree, the grave moral evil, the horror that that permits, that it is frankly preferable that our children are raped on an industrial scale by largely immigrant gangs than it is to protect them. And the report says that a Muslim scholar says the rape gangs were of around 95% Pakistani Muslims. And that's from a Pakistani Muslim scholar. It's not from someone who could be described as being outside of the community. In addition, the report says that at least 250,000 of our children have been raped and even trafficked abroad and continue in captivity after this. And I would remind you that the inquiry was written with the advice of lawyers, and it was edited by people like Charlie Downs, Harrison Pitt, and George Firm, who have obviously helped to produce the document. But this is not a speculative piece of, if you like, polemical literature. This is an account that has been legally attested to and contains testimony from the victims of this system going back many years. And it includes, again, horrendous stories such as so-called caregivers delivering victims back to their rapists. It's frankly astonishing. And when you find out, as you do time and again, that it was impossible to speak about this without risking the ruin of your career, without risking being vilified, and even if you did bring the authorities' attention to these matters, nothing ever happened. Bear in mind that this has been public knowledge for decades. Repeatedly, individuals have tried to get something done about it, and that's why we're in this position today, where Rupert Lowe is compelled to basically fund and produce this inquiry, because no one in the state wants to do it, and that's the reason why the mainstream media is completely ignoring it, because it is an indictment of them. Because the silence of the media, the police, the judiciary, the organs of the state, the NGOs, the civil servants, the so-called carers, they are equally culpable in this in many ways. And that is a very serious charge to make. But it is the only explanation that satisfies the facts. It is the only answer to the obvious question, how could this have gone on for so long? And that's why, at the end of the inquiry, they call for justice not just against the perpetrators, but also for the officials whose action or inaction created the environment in which these horrible crimes, the worst crimes against our people in history, have not only been made possible, but they've become a routine fact of life across the British Isles.
Absolutely. And just to back up what you're saying, from the inquiry, this is about a woman named Fiona, at least that's the name that she was given here. Care staff negligence was extreme. Abusers would sit in cars outside waiting for the girls, openly converse with the staff, and even phone the home to inquire about the girls. Fiona believes the staff were aware of what was happening, but felt powerless to stop it rather than being actively complicit. Nevertheless, the children's home received £5,000 per week to care for her and failed miserably. Fiona suspects the management avoided proper investigation for fear of being labeled racist. Now, I'm sorry, to me, that's not sufficient. Obviously, nobody wants to be called racist, but I think it has to be understood that this was a top-down program that I believe, you know, in the inquiry, they note that, you know, the British Nationality Act of 1948 was sort of the first stepping stone on the path towards, you know, Tony Blair's 1997 full-scale industrialization and, you know, giant operation to force mass immigration on everybody. This is sort of part and parcel to the New World Order that was created after World War II, where this idea of multicultural pluralism was the keystone. And it's always been a lie. It's always been an illusion. It has never actually existed. The violence, the chaos, the conflict has simply been hidden from the public, but there's never been an instance or a time period in which there was a thriving multicultural community. It has always been a disaster, a tragedy of human suffering as a consequence of this invasion. It's just been covered up ubiquitously and absolutely everywhere and constantly. It is crushed. And the point you make, I mean, again, we could go through point by point, but these girls would go to the police with the evidence of the rapes, you know, on their bodies, and the police would throw them in prison or criticize them or say, okay, we're going to handle it and then just do nothing. I mean, how many times does that have to happen before the, you know, learned helplessness is adopted and the little girls go, there's nobody that's going to help me. I better just give in. I mean, this whole thing has been a top down program. Training has gone in to convince people to allow this to happen. Or, you know, the other thing I'd like to see is what were the races of the people involved? It actually makes a lot more sense if, well, there's a jobs program to give, you know, the wives of the rapists jobs in the care homes. I mean, it is a giant program. It's not. So, I mean, what do you think about that? Because to me, again, that, you know, the idea of like, well, they just didn't want to be called racist. I'm struggling for that to be sufficient to explain what's going on here. Do you understand what I mean?
Well, yes. I mean, look, I've spoken to the idea before that everything, every evil that's committed against us in the internationalist, liberal, or what you might call the global system, the globalist system, is also an industry. And the fact that you know that this is an industry and that these, that there are basically partnered NGOs, and then there are affiliate programs that effectively monetize and perpetuate this horrendous evil. This is the same in every other dimension. Like, you know, mass migration isn't a human rights issue. It's an industry. There, people are paid, partnered with criminal gangs to be trafficked here for profit. If you look at the transgender craze, that's not a civil rights issue. That's also an industry that not only permissions but monetizes the mutilation and sterilization of children, which disfigures people. And obviously, this is dreadful. These things are also businesses. That's a significant point. But the point about ideology that I would make is that when you have an ideology, when you get rid of Christianity, replace it with the worship of liberal state religion, for example, which is what you get. You don't get the absence of religious belief. You get its transference into political ideals. And one of the totems of the liberal state religion is racism. If you think about the Manchester Arena bombing, men went into a concert in Manchester, were suspiciously dressed, sweating, looking dangerous, of Muslim appearance. He was a Muslim, had a backpack on. When the security guard was interviewed after that atrocity, he said he suspected this man because he was acting suspiciously. He looked like he was carrying a bomb. I think I would stop him. But he didn't. And he didn't stop him because he said, I was afraid of being accused of being a racist for racially profiling him. Had that security guard acted on his training and instincts, then all those people wouldn't be dead and injured. This is what this voodoo curse does. It literally endangers your life. It can literally end your life. It means the people who are there to protect you don't discharge your duty, and it means the people who are there who want to harm you can do so with a free hand. Now, speaking about harm and danger, you just put a headline out there saying from the independent newspaper in Britain, saying that Rupert Lowe is the most dangerous man you've never heard of. I would ask to explain this, because whenever these charges are made, let's just not just dismiss them as like the poisonous self-defense of a rotten system, which is what they also are, but let's take them seriously for a second. To whom is Rupert Lowe a danger? Is Rupert a danger to my children, to ours and to yours? Is he a danger to the victims of an industrial-scale rape of Britain that's been taking place for decades with the permission of the authorities? No. He's a danger to the corrupt establishment whose policies created this environment and whose officials permitted it to take place, because the cardinal sin of racism meant we could never mention the most horrendous crime against our people in our history, which is what it is. So that's what Rupert Lowe is a danger to. He's a danger to the system of politics and economy that monetizes the misery and indeed the destruction of your life and its value, of your people, of your religion, your nation, your civilization entirely, and they call you evil if you try to stop this. Now, what the point of this inquiry is not simply to list this for the purpose of political capital or attention grabbing, as some of these sniping individuals have said in the press. This is justice. We are talking about a demand for justice. Finally, we must have justice. This is the first phase. The next phase is, of course, talking about how you implement that meaningful justice to bring the perpetrators to justice, but also the officials who committed these actions and whose policies led to them becoming normalized.
Absolutely. Up to and including the current PM, Keir Starmer, who was involved in this from the beginning. We'll be right back with Frank Wright. Stay with us.
Inflation is up. That's an issue. So how does Berkshire handle that with its business?
Well, we can't handle runaway inflation except not to be there in the way of it. If you look at the number of countries that have had runaway inflation since World War II, you know, in my lifetime, it's very large. Once you create that, it becomes a different world. And of course, you have countries that have gone bankrupt like six or seven times. I mean, it's just amazing what people do. Not having faith in the money does to a country. It turns it into something else.
Dollar collapse means we keep continuing on where we are. Dollar devalues. We've got massive inflation. You raise interest rates to slow that inflation down. So This is going to have a cataclysmic effect on the insurance industry, on pension funds, on everything. And the
let's be clear, though, a dollar being the world currency is how we could just print it and buy whatever we wanted. If the world sees it like the Mexican peso or worse, we're screwed. So here's Prince Charles, the king, announcing the digital chains, the mark of the beast system, and a dovetail with Tony Blair, who's globally, through the UN and Bill Gates, standardized the world ID that the UK, under orders of the king, I thought he's just ceremonial, no, he could dissolve Parliament anytime he wants, is now going into place. This all ties into everything. We'll talk to the top economist, a great patriot, Peter Kirkley, in a moment about it, but here's the clips.
My ministers will also proceed with the introduction of digital ID that will modernize how citizens interact with public services.
Tell us a bit about what it means for what government should do in terms of its digital infrastructure, digital ID, data centers, and so on.
The first thing a country needs to do is to unify all of their data so it can be consumed and used by the AI model. You have to take all of your healthcare data, your diagnostic data, your electronic health records, your genomic data. We have to take all of this data we have in our country and move it into a single, if you will, unified data platform.
What they do is Oracle make big donations to Tony Blair's Institute, and Tony Blair's Institute advocates for further advantages for Oracle and Oracle affiliated entities. Listen, the centralization of data and the centralization of power is part of a dark and nefarious agenda.
People are really crazy if they don't call you. You're on record, the biggest company, because you have the best ratings, the best gold and silver prices. It is the smart move. Get a free consultation, they can roll over financial instruments.
This should be a happy time, right? So don't let the news scare you, but rather use the wisdom, the creativity that God gave you. Go into tangible assets that have zero counterparty risk. Silver was up over 140% last year. Since January 30th, when it corrected and it had a 50% correction, went down into the 60s, it's almost 90. Literally, since February, silver's up over 30%, Alex. There is a path to safety here financially, and that's what tangible assets do. This is what
God
the numbers
always
are
gives
telling
his
us.
People a way out, but the people perish always. For lack of knowledge.
Always. He always does. He's never going to say something, even if it's the mark of the beast. When he talks about it in Revelation, he's not going to say something unless we have a choice to either accept or reject, because he didn't create robots.
KEPM.com/gold. Sign up for the email there to get a free consultation. We'll call you right back. Or you can call the number 720-605-3000. The smartest investment you could have made in the last 3 years. I'm telling you right now, this is the place to go. 720-605-3000.
Program leftists failed to silence. It's the Alex Jones Show.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is the Alex Jones Show. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. You can find us at alexjoneslive.com. You can support us by going to thealexjonesstore.com. We have some fantastic new products there, such as the new premium nylon tactical belt. It's available from thealexjonesstore.com for only $39.99. It's built from heavy-duty nylon webbing with smooth automatic ratchet buckle, no holes, no guessing, no too tight or too loose. Very nice, fancy belts. They have cool little designs on them, the Cross Edition, the 1776 Edition, and the Alex Jones Signature. You can get them each for under $40, or for a limited time, you can get all three bundled together for just $99. They are fantastic belts, extremely strong tactical belts for the person in your family that is into that type of stuff. If they've got the knife, if they've got the wallet, complete the set with the belt. But of course, it keeps us on the air. It keeps us talking about this stuff, such as the rape gang inquiry that my guest Frank Wright is here to comment on, because I'm shocked by this. Apparently, this is being basically totally unremarked in the UK media, which is kind of shocking to me, because this being Rupert Lowe, member of parliament, and I mean, this should, the way that the inquiry's been carried out, this should sort of demand coverage from the media, but they're totally ignoring it because they have no positive way to spin it. So they're going to be silent on it. We're not. We're going to continue to talk about it, just like we're going to talk about all of this stuff and have talked about this stuff for decades. it's not just about, you know, going to the store to make us rich. We're not getting rich, folks. We're doing everything we can to keep our heads above water and try desperately to fight back against this monolithic and ruthless conspiracy that is dominating every European nation and America all at once. We are the bulwark fighting back against it, using the information that they're trying to conceal from you, exposing it in a desperate attempt to invoke action to get justice and set ourselves back on the right track. Because being on the wrong track, like, again, there aren't even words to describe what has gone on here. So please support us in this mission. Go to thealexjonesstore.com. We have fantastic products there. It's a win-win really for everybody. And it allows us to stay on the air, to have these great guests, to have these conversations that are so necessary and not being had by anybody else with this level of production and, you know, ability to get the message out to people that aren't, you know, actively searching for it. And that's the crazy thing. My guest is Frank Wright. You can find him on X at Frank Wrighter, frankwriter.com. He's a contributor to LifeSite News, and his work focuses mostly on defense of life, family, and faith, exposing the powerful forces of cultural decay and globalism that threaten these foundational pillars. And again, I don't have the words, Frank, to describe what is exposed in this inquiry. And the question is, how did it get here? How did this get established like this? Without anybody really, you know, recognizing or standing up against it to any sufficient degree to even slow it down. And there are instances in here that show just the brazenness with which these rape gangs operated. And again, I don't even like we're on the radio. We probably have families listening. I don't even want to get into some of the details, but they're necessary to understand the real scope of what happened here. And the reason they're necessary is because there are instances with like a young girl preteen, really like 12, 13 years old, who has a bottle broken inside of her and then has to take herself to the emergency room, and the hospital simply patch her up and send her right back out. And the thing that sticks out to me is that the migrant knows he's not concerned. He's not the one taking her to the hospital and going, oh geez, I might get caught. He knows he can operate with impunity. He knows the police are on his side. He knows the hospital's not going to make inquiries. They understand that they're protected, and they act in accordance with that. And they're sending messages. They're using their real names. They have no fear whatsoever. They understand the situation. The police understand the situation. It's the regular British people that seem to be living in this delusion that crime is going to be punished and that the police are working for them. The migrants know fully well what they could get away with, and they do. And it's a job for them. And it's every day they're having these quote unquote parties where they're renting these girls out or picking them up from the care homes. That's what stood out to me, was the shocking like competence they had in carrying out these crimes. They knew that they would get away with anything. And that to me, I think is, you know, tells you a lot about what's actually going on here. Your thoughts on that?
Well, I would encourage you to read the Rape Bear Inquiry yourself. I cannot do justice to the harrowing nature and scale of the problem. You must read it. It's unparalleled in anything I've ever read in my entire life. And to be honest, it takes a maximum discipline to speak to it without being overwhelmed with emotion.
Yeah.
It's simply atrocious. It has to be read to be believed. And it's true. Now, if you read the foreword, what Rupert Lowe MP said, he said, Britain doesn't have a racism problem, it has an immigration problem. If you understand what he's saying there, if you just really examine that remark, it does explain much of why this has gone on, where its causes lie, and how the entire political system, including the media, politicians, and so on, the state, and its apparatchiks, if you like, have permissioned this. This speaks to the root of the problem. You cannot solve problems unless you look at their causes. This is not just a case of describing the effects. Immigration is the cause, and that in turn is caused by a particular political economy, an economic and political view that we now know, if you like, is the international liberal system. And that, as you've said, has actually monetized horrendous crimes against us like this one, and indeed all the other insane policies which are destroying our civilization. Why does this matter? This matters because this reveals why this cannot be discussed honestly or addressed or stopped by the current political dispensation or its captive media. Because to challenge the basic principle that mass migration is a good thing and is making the world better is to collapse the entire political and economic argument under which we are currently ruled. It shows you, really, that we really are ruled by a system that can be correctly described as the politics of national suicide. It's not just destroying our people and replacing them. It's actually destroying the meaning and value of our lives and in corrupting the meaning of words like justice, safety, care, law, and order. It's destroying everything within our spirit, our vocabulary of experience, and outside of us in all our institutions. They're all corrupted. It is extremely damning. In that one sentence, Britain doesn't have a racism problem. It has an immigration problem. That problem hasn't arisen out of nothing. That is the product of policies. And the dangerous thing for the establishment and its media to recognise is that the British people are realising that what has been done by policy can be undone by policy. That is why Rupert Lowe is described as a dangerous man. He's not dangerous to we British. He's the greatest champion we've seen arise in our lifetime to defend us from a system that seems hell-bent on destroying us all and everything that we hold dear. He's dangerous to that. And why is he dangerous? Because the crimes that have been monetized and created by policy against us are so vast that ordinary British people are realizing that something has to change. If we don't get rid of this system, ultimately it's going to get rid of us. It's not people like people who are described as conspiracy theorists, extremists, or, you know, the slurs that are attached to people like myself. It's not people like us who are really making this case. It's reality. And the reality is that the British people, a lot of them are fully aware that this has been going on. And it's been going on for so long, pardon me, and it's been going on with the obvious collusion of so many people in authority who should have protected us and protected our children, that the British people have largely given up hope that any justice can ever be seen. And Rupert Lowe has given us that hope back, and it is a realistic and practical hope. It is a rational hope, but it's a necessary hope. If we are to have a nation worth the name, if we are to have a future for our children worth the name, then we must have justice. And I would like to give a practical example of that. If you look at a picture of St. Michael, you can see that in one hand he holds the scales of justice. And those scales are imbalanced. They're like this. And in the other hand, what does he hold? He holds a sword. And that is commonly understood as the sword of truth. And the purpose of restorative justice is not to see the scales pushed in the other direction in an insane manner. It is to balance them. It's to equalize them. And according to the image of St. Michael, the way to do this is with the sword of truth. The rape gang inquiry is a sword of truth to cut through the culture of silence, to cut through the political and economic establishment that not only creates the conditions for these vast crimes, but actually turns them into micro-industries. And gives people positions of privilege and power to protect them and perpetuate them. This is a serious injustice. This speaks to the profound corruption of the organs of our state. This is what it means to restore Britain. It means to restore meaning to the word justice, to dignity to the lives of the victims and those future victims who will be victimized if we do not correct this serious imbalance, which has, frankly, corrupted our institutions to the point where, again, the mass rape of our children has become normalised. So this is the reason why Mr. Lowe is described as a danger. He's a danger to a wicked system. And the danger is, and that danger is present now, is that the British people have not just awoken to the depth of that corruption and evil in their politics and economics, but they've also awoken to the fact that in Restore Britain, led by Rupert Lowe, they have a serious, practical, and realistic hope of a political solution to the state of national emergency into which these political insanities and evils have delivered us all.
How do you make that case to the wider British public? Is the wider British public aware of this? Are they talking about this? Is this being discussed on mainstream media there? Do people even know about this? Because, you know, in the last week, I've been off, so I haven't been able to cover it, but there's been like five instances of there was the 5-year-old kid being arrested while his father was, you know, handcuffed and pepper sprayed. There was the young man whose head was slammed into a metal bar. I mean, it seems like any attempt by the British people to have any say in their governance, to speak up for themselves, is crushed with the most brutal repressive tactics I've ever seen. I mean, makes Nazi Germany look like a cakewalk. I mean, they're literally killing people who are simply protesting, or they're allowing gangs of migrants to wander around with weapons, targeting British people and doing nothing about it. I mean, it's so egregious what's going on here. Sell me the political solution, because I got to admit, at this point, seeing Keir Starmer go from letting off 13,000 perpetrators to becoming prime minister, it's like, how do you do this without a wholesale, total, complete, like, maybe America needs to, you know, give UK the Iraq treatment or something, go deliver democracy. It's like, that's where my brain goes because of the ubiquity of this corruption. What is there a political solution? You got to sell me on that, because at this point, it's like, I'm having trouble seeing it, frankly.
Yes, there is. Well, you can see that, for example, the absence of this issue from the mainstream media is no accident. That doesn't mean to say the British people don't know about this enormous scandal and crime committed against their children. From memory, and I hope not to have produced the report, the rape gang scandal took place in over 140 towns and cities across England, Scotland, Wales, and Northern Ireland. This is not an isolated phenomenon. If you live in these communities, you know that it's been going on for decades. You're fully aware of it, and it is a damning indictment against the police and the government and all their organs and agencies and the NGOs affiliated with them. The British people are fully aware of this. They have had to endure it. Most people who live in these regions know someone who's been involved in it, as I do personally. It is no secret. But it was a collective idea that nothing will be done under a locked political system, a forced consensus in which there's no serious political alternative. There's no hope in any of the parties. There's no probity or integrity or will to investigate, because this continued of successive governments under the Labour, Liberals and Conservative parties as well. So, of course, this is the reason why you wonder why. How could Keir Starmer get what's called a dictatorial supermajority in the last general election? The left-leaning Institute for Public Policy Research published a paper called Half of Us, and it said that around half the British electorate simply did not vote in the last election. That's to say, the last election was fought between around 50% of the people who can vote, and does not include the number of people who are eligible to vote who didn't register. So only 50% of the registered voters voted. What does that mean? It means that half of us, at least half of us, don't vote at all, because there's nothing there to vote for, because you've completely lost any faith in the political system, its parties, its membership and its policies to do anything meaningful to help you in your life. Again, this is why Rupert Lowe's Restore is seen as such a danger, because what Restore are doing is you can see them consistently appealing, mobilizing people, appealing to people. You can see the sincerity and integrity of the party, but it's a genuine chance for a political solution to the national crisis. They want to save the nation. They're going to vote for Restore because they've nothing else to vote for. They say, I've never voted in my life. If you can cut through any party in the West, can cut through to the increasing near majority of people who are so disaffected by their corrupt, criminal, and indeed, shall we say, it's almost like you're ruled by a crime syndicate, the degree to which they've subtracted the value of your life over the last 30 years to a century. If you finally get an alternative to that and you see, yes, there is a political solution, it mobilizes people who've been so disaffected that they just don't vote at all. And that is an existential threat to the corrupt political cartel, if you like, that is managing us all into a series of international standardized decline. Because that's the whole idea. That's the globalist idea, if you like, in a nutshell, is to standardize the world underneath its own standards. So instead of nations, some kind of borderless international bazaar of bargain hunters. And that bargain includes the sexual bargain of your women and children. Because let's not forget that this completely amoral, corrupt, and indeed satanic system practically advertises our women and children, but to be sexually available by a constant stream of phone-available hyper-pornography. And so is it any wonder if you collapse the borders and let millions of people in from all over the world, if they've been watching graphic pornography featuring white women and children, they come to your country, what are they going to do? I mean, I've seen it described as a rape safari in Britain. And I thought that was excessive myself until you look at the figures. You look at how many children have been victimized by this. And again, Look at the enormous rocketing rapes of women from Sweden to Britain across the West, where you've seen these rape statistics skyrocket exponentially alongside migration figures. That's because it is universally degrading to everyone. It is impossible to defend the system in words of one syllable. It's impossible to defend the globalist or internationalist liberal political economy, honestly, in an honest argument. And so that's why they don't do that. And instead, if you point out the terrible effects that it's caused in our lives, it's replaced our lives with an atrocity exhibition of constantly horrendous effects, where you have to explain to your children sometimes what you've been watching. You've been watching one of our people being beheaded in the street by a man who shouldn't be here. You've been watching someone die in police handcuffs when they've complained of being mortally wounded. You're watching a report come out that is so unspeakable you can't even describe it to your children. These are factors of our everyday lives now. These aren't just news stories or sensationalist soundbites. This is the dire and obscene degraded condition into which we've been delivered by this political system. So if you think it's extremist to say that this is as if you've been ruled by the enemies of our people and civilization, that they act like a crime syndicate, how else would you describe the effects of these policies over decades at scale? Look at the effects they've produced. If that's not a crime on a scale so vast that it's nameless, then nothing is. And that's the condition of humanity generally. We are all degraded by this. Whether you agree with me politically or not, it's degrading all of our lives. And if we don't stop it soon, the horror will be simply so vast it'll be impossible to contain, and we'll all be consumed in some blood tide of vengeance. And that is the primary duty of the state, is to prevent this kind of barbarism from consuming our civilization. That is the hope that's offered by Restore Britain. It is a credible, practical hope. There are serious policies that have been presented and been developing how we get from this rotten, corrupt state to the balance that is necessary to restore justice, order, and a life worth living for our people and a future for our children. It can happen. I believe it will happen, because the awful reality created by this corrupt political establishment is simply unbearable. And the fact that there's now a realistic and honest solution to that, with moderate, sensible policies that want simply a high-trust society and, shall we say, the removal of the politics of insanity and national suicide and its replacement with decency and a meaningful justice. This is the argument that's being made. What kind of people describe that appeal as extremism? As I like to say to people, I remember Britain when it was a good, happy country to grow up in. That was the country I grew up in. I want that country back for my children. Is that such a terrible thing to say? And the rape gang inquiry shows how far we've come from those, if you like, fondly remembered days to the horrors that we inhabit now that have been normalized. And this is how we get back to having our dignity, to having our homeland again, and to having a future worth the name for our children. And if they vilify you for demanding that, consider how evil you must be. Consider how evil you must be to say, oh, look, I just want something good. Oh, well, you're a bad person. And that's basically what we're seeing now. How long can that system continue? That's plainly insane. Millions of ordinary people can see it. And as they continue to fight this line, that's what they're effectively doing. They're saying, no, we're going to make your life corrupted by evil and miserable. We're going to destroy it. And if you complain about it, we're going to lock you up. Well, they can't lock everyone up.
That's right. And so much effort has gone into and continues to go into stopping any backlash, political backlash, peaceful backlash, violent backlash, whatever it is. Without the intervention of the government, this really probably wouldn't even be an issue. And it was one of the things that I found very interesting throughout the rape inquiry, the gang rape inquiry, is that you have example after example where the gangs are actually stopped. That, you know, a girl is protected. And it only ever happens in instances like this with a woman named Whitney. Whitney recalls that her brothers stopped, that the brothers that were abusing her, stopped contacting her after they arrived at her house to collect her and found all of her uncles sitting on the wall outside. After that incident, they never came back. She cannot remember exactly how or why her uncles were there, but she believed her mother had asked them to intervene. I mean, time and time again, you see, nothing stops these people until they're afraid that the English Defense League is going to show up with baseball bats or her uncle is waiting there to confront the guy. You have to have a government intervene to stop regular people from fighting back. And that's, of course, what they're doing.
Yes.
With Rupert Lowe as well. They want to shut down the,
this
I mean,
is,
please.
This is the reason why Rupert Lowe has sensibly said we will put before the British people the question of reinstatement of the death penalty. If you look at the execution of the SFI Joseph de Maistre, he makes a very credible case to say that once you abolish meaningful penalties for people who commit the most heinous acts, you basically give them liberty to do so. The people who are going to do these things to you are not going to listen to reasoned arguments. But another thing that Restore is offering is the restoration of meaningful and appropriate justice to rebalance the heinous acts committed against the most innocent of our people. And so how terrible is it to just say, I'd like to live in a nation where my children are not raped with the permission of the state by people who should not be here? This is the first step towards that. Remember, this is phase one. And the next phases must be a pathway towards meaningful justice for the victims, the prosecution and punishment of the perpetrators, and the people that made this possible by policy and permission.
I pray that you're able to do it before they totally shut down, you know, your ability to even communicate. Obviously, now they're trying to implement digital ID, limit access to social media. Of course, Blue Sky is, you know, exempt from that. And of course, throughout the inquiry, there are these examples of, you know, WhatsApp groups or whatever else. These people are, you know, inviting their friends, sending child pornography to people. Somehow that's going to continue unabated, but certainly the backlash to that will be clamped down on, and anybody speaking out will be punished. So, I mean, really, it's like a race against time, whether Restore Britain can actually get elected and Rupert Lowe can actually set about achieving justice, or whether they're able to truly clamp down on communications and ability to actually be represented by somebody that values the British people and doesn't want them destroyed. Incredible stuff. I mean, it's just, please, I'm just speechless about this whole situation. Like, I've got nothing to add other than just, like, you gotta read the inquiry report. Final words, Frank Wright.
Yes, it is harrowing. I enjoin you to read it. You must read it. I think it's your duty to read it. But I think basically, if this causes you to despair, don't despair. Everything that the liberal system is doing now to try and retain its grip on power is actually an act of self-harm. Just think about the effect at scale on people who aren't yet fully aware of the crimes committed by the state against them. What the state is effectively doing now is saying, if you try to do good, you are bad. You are the worst possible people alive. If you try to protect our children and secure a meaningful future for them, you're terrible. If you want a homeland worth the name for your own people, where we've been here for centuries, thousands of years, then you're an extremist. What we're talking about here is that you are being demonized by the extremists in power, and every argument that they make to try and demonize people who just want good, just common sense. I don't want my children to be raped. I don't want people to be slaughtered in the street. This system cannot continue, and it won't, and I think we're going to win.
100%. You have the moral superiority. Wield it like a sword. We'll be right back.
It took them 2 years to do it. When Bigley came on as our sponsor, now the owner of the Auctions Network, and then the main backer, I said, I want gravity-fed filters. I sent them the test from previous sponsors, and I said, these guys fell off. Their quality wasn't as good. I got rid of them. This happens to these companies. There's only out of more than 50 gravity-fed companies, three or four that have the very best filters that cut everything out. They're stainless steel, and they start cutting the quality for whatever reason. I said, I want the highest-rated stainless steel. I want a clone of these products, but even better, and I want filters rated this high or higher. They went out, took them 2 years, they did it. This is something everybody needs, everybody wants. There's a giant market of folks that know how wonderful gravity-fed filters are and know what quality is. We have all the tests published on the site. It's the best. There are companies selling filters that the stainless steel isn't as nice, anywhere close, and the filters aren't even the highest rated. They're selling the damn things for $400. They're selling units similar to ours, aren't even as good, for $500 retail, discounting at $400. These babies are $300 and even lower for VIP members. There is very small markup. The markup is not even 100% in these, okay? And when you're VIP, it's even lower. That is the best deal. This is a home run. This is the best. This is going to help hire new crew on top of the crew, extra crew. It's going to help get new reporters and hosts and the new network getting completed with all the equipment stuff. I mean, this is a big investment here. We're rebuilding our operations. We can't do it without you. So your word of mouth for the show, AlexJonesLive.com, getting the free app, sharing that with others where they can get it, AlexJonesApp.com, following us on Exit Real Alex Jones, following us on Rumble at Rumble.com/The Alex Jones Show Live. That's all critical in telling others to do that. Your word of mouth, your prayers king, but getting these products is also critical. And we only sell you stuff that really empowers you, because we want you to love it and be impressed with it. So we have a relationship.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
A Monday warrior, mean stride. Today's Tom Sawyer, mean pride.
Welcome back, folks. You know, the last note from Frank Wright there, who we were just talking to, you got to follow him on X at Frank Writer. That's Frank, W-R-I-G-H-T-E-R. You can find him at frankwriter.com, F-R-A-N-K-W-R-I-G-H-T-E-R.com. He has been absolutely fantastic. And, of course, he's been around for a while, but ever since he happened to be interviewed on his way to a Restore Britain rally, and the points he made were so salient and poignant. He's absolutely, you know, exploded in popularity since then. Well deserved, I think. He has such a way of laying this out. I gotta admit, I have trouble even putting into words what I think about this, and it's not like I need, like, you require my elaboration. The stuff that is contained in the Rape Gang Inquiry Report is harrowing and horrifying enough on itself. I'm gonna read some excerpts from it in this next hour, but I'm gonna go first to this video of a Pakistani Muslim guy in the UK expressing exactly how he feels. And there's infinite videos like this. This is just one, but I could find a million of them. And it's a mindset perfectly reflected in the Rape Gang Inquiry. And no matter how you feel, if you are a far leftist that thinks all of this is born from racism, and sure, there's some bad up, you tell me, how many of these people is it acceptable to bring in? How many of these people that you're about to see, like, what percentage? You know, if it's 1%, is that too much? If it's 10%, you know, what do you do at that point? And I think it's a much higher percentage than will ever be acknowledged. Here's a guy who is simply confident enough to admit what a lot more of them are thinking. Let's watch.
Why do you want to hear my story? I'm not here to tell a story. I'm here to rule. Fucking rule.
To rule?
I'm here to rule. To rule you, to rule Trump, to rule Elon Musk, to rule Netanyahu. To rule Jews.
Okay.
Yep.
Right. That's
what a
strange thing to say.
Hmm.
It's a
very poor attitude.
You're a great guest. You're a great guest in this country.
No.
You're a great guest.
What guest?
Yeah. So you're a guest here, and you're saying you want to rule us.
This is my land.
Is it? Is it? Okay. Got it. Okay.
Like, millions and millions of people are our responsibility.
Sorry. Say that again.
This is Allah's land. The whole world is. Listen.
UK.
Why do you have so much pride? UK. Listen, I'm answering to this. The whole world, everything which is in your consciousness is limited, man. This is why you are talking this kind of, you know.
So the whole world is Allah.
Everything is Allah. World, what is world? World is, so world is a planet. Earth is this man. Earth.
It's quite common. Around the UK, it's quite a lot.
So these people do it, huh?
Well, yeah.
It's been reported on.
Yeah.
Report, fuck the report. Who reported? Hmm.
The report. Police crime statistics.
There's quite a lot. There's quite a lot.
Police are liars.
Uh-huh.
Not denying the police.
All right, good.
All right.
That's good, man. Yeah. It's a nice weed. Let's have a look at it. Oh, we're going to have a look at it. You brought it up in the conversation.
I'm just telling you.
Don't show me that. Don't care that much. Of course it is. Weed. There you go. Good for you, man.
That's a lot of weed.
It's mixed with tobacco.
It's drunk. It's heroin.
It's not very nice.
All right, so this was
looks like a very new T-shirt you've got on there.
Reposted by Juanita Broderick, Muslim dude needs a wake-up call. Quote, I'm here to rule you, to rule Trump, Elon Musk, Netanyahu, and Jews. Why are you proud of the UK? This is my land. It belongs to Allah, says a recently arrived refugee without documents living for free in a British hotel. The British government is actively importing an army. Why do you think he feels so confident? Why do you think he feels confident to say this on camera, having just arrived? They are fearless because they understand the situation. They understand how to play it. They understand that the police are in their grasp and that they've already worked their way into the highest halls of power. And we'll get into the mindset behind this. People really need to understand. You need to be able to empathize with these people not to agree with them, not to sympathize with them, but to put yourselves in their mindset and understand what's really happening here. I'll explain what I mean on the other side. Stay with us. It's the Alex Jones Show, alexjoneslive.com. Share that link. We'll be right back.
Thanks for having me. Before I start, wanted to pitch a couple of the products there for the listeners. The bovine colostrum has been fantastic. My mom had tremendous results, similar to the results your mom had with her hair and skin. Methylene blue, the mental clarity, the focus has been amazing. I just found that I just needed to up the dose a little bit from the recommendation, and then that really hit. So definitely helps to support the broadcast. Alex, the reason you're so successful and the reason so many people chime in is because you have the best guests. That does include Victor Boot, but I will reference the legendary Gerald Celente. What does he say time after time? When there's nothing left, they take us to war.
The bovine colostrum is incredible. The methylene blue, you fund us. You're our funders, not the Israelis or the Muslims or the Russians or the U.S. government. You fund us at the AlexJonesStore.com. And the new news site for all the feeds and articles is AlexJonesLive.com. And on Rumble, rumble.com/ The Alex Jones Show Live. We'll be right back.
The answer to 1984 is 1776. You're listening to The Alex Jones Show.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. The rape gang inquiry is not just the result of some rather hard-fought battles by the minds behind Restore Britain to bring light to the disturbing underpinnings of UK government. It is the culmination of generations of programming, of a plan put into place following World War II, which is still coming to fruition and succeeding wildly in what it intended to do the entire time. Everybody who's watching this program or has watched the Alex Jones program for any length of time has probably heard at length about the German program that put orphans in the homes of pedophiles on purpose as a social experiment, as a social programming method. And we've always pointed out that that program is by a guy named Kintler, and it was deliberately and explicitly designed to be anti-Nazi. It was this, you know, Kintler himself, I believe, was homosexual, and his father was a big-time Nazi National Socialist type person. And he connected, okay, my you know, father's adherence to this is somehow tied up in the idea of, you know, being afraid of, you know, sexuality. So therefore, to stop the potential rise of fascism ever in the future, we basically need to inculcate homosexuality from a very young age in everybody's life. Like, that's the, you know, the people that actively are literally carrying out pedophile programs, you go into their literature, their reasoning is to fight the specter of Nazism. Now, were Nazis really that bad? Maybe, but it was more about totally altering, totally changing, completely inverting the structure of the world, essentially, and the way in which people interacted with their governments and the purpose of governments. I mean, this was a deliberate change that was made. So in 1948, as the British people are like breathing a sigh of relief, having won World War II, feeling like we can finally go home and just get on with our lives and we're victorious and we defeated this great evil. Meanwhile, the actual war is really just beginning. The actual attack from the actual bad guys that actually find themselves and their, you know, ambitions constrained by the existence of, you know, regular people who oppose them to be too burdensome. They want to get rid of those regular people, so they institute a generations-long plan that, again, we are seeing come to fruition. So, again, it's not a coincidence. And I was doing all this research because I was trying to figure out, like, well, what was the design of it? Like, how did this come about? And what's up with the timing that you have this British Nationality Act of 1948? And it seems like 1948, really like 47 to 48, was this engine of activity by the New World Order. And of course, it continued into the early 50s. Bretton Woods, like, they reorganized the financial structure. They reorganized the family structure. They knew they couldn't do it all at once, but they put in place and into motion these operations that would eventually bear this poisonous fruit. And again, I don't think it's a coincidence that you have things like the Tavistock Clinic being folded into and being one of the founding organizations that actually became the NHS, which happened to be founded in 1948, the National Health Service of Britain. I don't think it's a coincidence that you have the Tavistock Institute becoming sort of in a lot of ways the NHS, being folded into the NHS. At the same year, you have the Empire Windrush ship that arrived full of people from the British colonies that were basically demanding that as British subjects, they be, you know, given a position on the mainland of Britain, and that was allowed, and that a huge portion of the people from Windrush, from this giant ship of immigrants that was the first big, you know, move of non-British people onto the British islands, like people not of British ancestry, they were British subjects, technically, that they all get jobs in the NHS. Isn't that interesting? And again, I was just sort of like talking to AI about this and going like, what year was this happening? And you know, when did this occur? And it just kept like coincidentally reaffirming what I was reading. Like I was like, what did the NHS have to do with Empire Windrush? And the response I got back from Grok was like, well, the claim that all of them got jobs at the NHS was not true. It was only most of them. And I was like, I didn't know that. I didn't know the people from Empire Windrush, which if you don't know, in 1948, there was this decommissioned German ship. It's a huge ship. It's like a giant, it's like one of the modern cruise ships. Absolutely massive. And it was coming, I believe, from Jamaica. And basically it was people, you know, demanding that they get to live in Britain, and the British government allowed them to do it. And it was sort of the first big Camp of the Saints style incursion of foreigners into Britain. And it was facilitated by the newly created NHS, who got them a lot of jobs specifically to be able to, you know, put posters up of, you know, black nurses from Jamaica, you know, treating white people and going, look how wonderful they're assimilating. Now, since then, the NHS, and you'll see in the Rape Gang Inquiry Report, their complicity with the rape gangs is like, it was necessary for this to go on. If the NHS had instead never been created and there were private hospitals all over the UK, I bet those private hospitals would not have had the training and the oversight that forced them to basically go along with the mass rape of 250,000 British girls. They probably would have spoken out against it. But when you can nationalize every hospital and turn it into one massive bureaucracy, and then you can control that bureaucracy from the top and downstream, you know, like the pyramid, you got a small number of people at the top. They dictate policy. It is distributed throughout the bureaucracy, and it becomes a very pertinent or very necessary component in this rape gang phenomenon occurring over the last several decades. The first rape gang of Pakistanis mentioned in the rape gang inquiry was all the way back in 1955. So again, in 1948, following World War II, the powers that be decided that the way the world was before was incompatible with their ultimate control. And so it had to be changed. And so you had to fundamentally remake the mentality of the people. And that included things like destroying the very concept of, you know, sexual propriety, as you saw in the case of Jason Kintler, Dr. Kintler in Germany, deciding to send orphaned little boys to homosexual pedophiles, or in some cases actually take them from their parents. Like, there's a consistency to all of this. There is a similarity between all of these countries all doing this at exactly the same time that is undeniable and unavoidable, and actually very important to understand when you're asking the question, how the hell did it get to this point? How the hell did it get this bad? And again, that's the thing that I think people are maybe missing. This idea that it's just fear of racism is insufficient explanation. It's not just people independently on their own going, well, I don't want to seem like a racist, so I better let these 15, you know, grown men have the little girl. I don't want to be racist after all. That's not how it worked. This is a top-down program. This was instituted on purpose with organizations like the Tavistock Institute, whose entire purpose of being is the manipulation of mass psychology. And they happen to be involved in all this. And it just so happens that all of these things come about within a few months of each other. The creation of the NHS, the creation of the Tavistock Institute, the Windrush Empire. It all is part and parcel with the deliberate remaking of the way the world works so that you could destroy the barriers to total control in global government, which happen to be the European people. The European people are that barrier. They're the ones that have to be destroyed. The Rape Gang Inquiry Report is the story of demoralization. That's what it is. That's the purpose of it. That's why it happened like this. It's the demoralization and ultimate destruction of the British people as a whole. And we're going to be joined by Carl Benjamin later in the show. I feel like I'll take this time now where I don't have a guest from England to, maybe not explicitly, but certainly hint towards, the violent revolution that should come about from this. Because while I understand that Restore Britain has a good opportunity to, set things right here, I don't know. I've seen the way the British government deals with dissidents. They are beyond tyrannical. And I really fear the way things are going, in that the people that are appropriately concerned about this sort of stuff maybe aren't taking the appropriate steps. I said last week before I went out of town, during the Belfast riots. Now, what happened to those? Kind of exactly what we told you, that they identified the leaders and then systematically went around and rounded them up because that's what's going to happen, because the people that are engaged in this are not acting like they are the French resistance, but they are. What I said last week was basically, would you be surprised if you were a member of the French resistance in occupied France that you were arrested for protesting the Nazis? Right? Like, if you're in the French resistance, if you're in this underground, resistance militia who is fighting back against the foreign occupation, are you going to go and politely ask the foreign occupiers to leave you alone? Do you think that's going to work? Or do you have to keep your identity totally secret? Do you have to operate in a style consistent with an underground resistance movement? Like, the people of Britain, God bless them, but it's like they are stuck in this learned helplessness kind of idea where they are essentially the French resistance going out and begging the Nazis, hey, would you please not kill us? And it's like, no, dude, they know exactly what they're doing, that the purpose is your destruction. They know that. I'm not sure protesting is going to help. And from what I've seen historically, voting doesn't help in the slightest. If anything, they punish you, right? If you vote to not have more immigrants, they say, how dare you, you racist, you're going to get more immigrants because of that. And then you can go into, historically, like, the thing is, it is genuinely insane. Like, you go over the history of Britain and they're just like the most generous, the most helpful, the most beneficial country of all time. They basically single-handedly sacrificed tens of thousands of their own men to stop the slave trade the world over. Everywhere that they colonized started doing infinitely better as a result of their colonization. And then when the colonies sort of came of age and wanted the British to leave, in almost every single case, the British said, okay, here are the keys. Have fun. That's what happened in Jamaica. There was a little bit of controversy with India, but there was no big Indian revolution where a bunch of British people got killed and driven out of the country. It was a political movement, and the British eventually said, okay, here's your country back. You can have it. Jamaica, other places like that were even more smooth. It was like the 1960s, and they're just like, okay, you're independent now. Have fun. And these are the people that are being demonized, that we just saw that Pakistani, whatever, ingrate refugee, quote unquote, who just arrived is like, F your country. It's nothing. It's evil. It is so inverted. It's almost beyond explanation, except when you truly empathize with these people. And I mean empathize. I don't mean sympathize. I don't mean agree with. I mean put yourself in their mindset to truly understand their evil. One of the most horrifying stories that came out decades ago and that we've referenced over and over and covered at the time was one instance of a girl in Britain kidnapped and raped, who escaped her captors, was walking down the street, bloody, bruised, crying, disoriented, when she approaches a stranger begging for help. Unfortunately, that stranger happens to be a Pakistani Muslim and rapes the girl. And then it happens again and then again. Put yourself in the mindset. Imagine you are a taxi driver late at night and you see a disoriented, disheveled girl crying, bleeding, stumbling up to you. Imagine the mindset that sees that and thinks, time to get my rocks off. Like imagine the mindset. Imagine the mindset of people who are raping children, videoing it, and then sending it to all of their cousins, their brothers, their imam, and everyone in their community. And that entire community then starts texting the girl saying, can I be next? Like, do you understand the mindsets of these people that are living in your country right now? Again, the rape gang inquiry sheds some light on it. But think about that mindset. Think about what that is like, what they're thinking on a daily basis. I mean, this is what they do. It talks about, you know, the fact that they call them parties, right? They would have these, I mean, it's gang rapes. It's gang rape orgies with a bunch of drugged out, in some cases, like they would actually like dose them with heroin, just like unconscious. And like, you know, what would you do if you walked into your friend's house and saw something like that? Would you immediately start to participate? Is there a single person listening to my voice that would have any reaction other than outrage and fury, and you would like immediately try to step in and stop it? These people's mindsets are so utterly alien to ours that I do think people have trouble understanding it. Like, it doesn't make any sense to them because we're so used to like the Western conscience, the Western morality that's just assumed and ubiquitous here in the West. It's absent in these cultures. It's absent in these groups of people. They feel no shame, no grief, no regret, no guilt. They do it on a daily basis for years, and they only ever get mad if they get caught. They only ever pretend to feel bad if it is in service of them getting away with it so they can do it more. Do you understand what that mindset is like? Do you understand that you are welcoming in millions and millions and millions and millions of people like that? Woman pleads for American help as France seeks to jail her for exposing rape due to migrant invasion. I would like to play her video. Because again, it's not just England. Why is this happening in France? Why is France and England both coming out with digital ID programs all of a sudden? Why are they trying to shut down X and TikTok for exposing this, when throughout the rape gang inquiry report, it is replete with examples of the rape gangs themselves using WhatsApp, using all these different communication? Like, here's an idea. Here's a crazy thought, because I don't want to just give you problems. I'll give you a solution. Right now in the UK, they want everybody who uses the internet to provide an ID. And the idea is that they're banning social media for under 16s. How about you ban social media or require a digital ID for internet access for every migrant, but not the British people? Wouldn't that make more sense? Because it's the migrants that are sharing child pornography as a catalog saying, which one do you like? They're all 5 pounds apiece. Like, that's how they're using these communication networks. The British government is completely uninterested in stopping that type of communication. It's the reporting on that that's posted on places like X that they're really worried about, because this is a top-down program that has been in place for decades and that they intend to run until the British people no longer exist. It's a genocidal attack on the British people, just like it's a genocidal attack on the German and the French and the Dutch and the Spanish people. It's happening ubiquitously because it is a single program. It's not a coincidence. It's not an accident. And it's not a natural or even appropriate response to the situation that actually exists. It is a manufactured response from the people in power who use their control of the media, who use their control of the political process to carry this out in a top-down fashion. So we'll read more of the rape gang inquiry here. And again, I'm not trying to simply read the most inflammatory stuff. I could do that, and it is horrifying. But the more important thing is figuring out what is the underlying motive here? Why is this happening? And really, that's the key, right? Why? Why is this happening? Why did they do this? Why is it allowed to continue? If you can't answer that, how are you going to defeat it? This isn't a coincidence. I've often said, to be a conspiracy theorist, the one thing you have to understand is things don't just happen. Okay? People didn't just arrive all of a sudden. The migrants didn't just spring up out of the ground like dandelions. They were brought here on purpose by people with a mission. And when you hear from the rape gang inquiry about the way in which the victims were advertised to their, you know, fellow rapists, you don't think those messages are also going overseas to Pakistan? You don't think there are probably daily thousands of messages from Pakistanis in the UK filming, photographing the brutal abuse? I mean, I guarantee you they're not just sending those videos going, you've got to get here. It's crazy. We just get to do this all day, every day. I bet there's videos, you know, they're probably filming the police who come in and knock on the door, see the drugged out girls lying there and go, all right, well, everything looks in order here. Good evening, gentlemen, and leaving. And they turn the camera to themselves and goes, you got to get here, guys. This is crazy, but this is what it's like. This is what it's like. You got to get here. I mean, and then, of course, the NGOs are there to provide them the trip across, to instruct them how to answer questions in order to apply for asylum. Oh, you're from that country? Well, just say that you're gay. Then they have to give you security. It's, again, I hesitate to even read some of this stuff, but here's a good example. Chloe is one of the women questioned and gave answers in the inquiry. Chloe was questioned by police due to her absence from school, because she was a child, on a number of occasions. Each time she was asked where she had been, who she'd been with, and what she'd been doing, she replied that she'd been having sex with adult males in cars. Rather than opening an investigation and pursuing her abusers, the police dismissed Chloe as a prostitute. They asked her whether she was consenting to the sexual activity, and despite Chloe telling them she did not know the definition of the word consent, they reported that she had been. Again, what explain? You've got a 12-year-old girl who's like, I'm being raped by adult men in cars. And the response from the police is, it's fine. She's just a prostitute. It's fine. She's just a child prostitute. Nothing to see here. Nothing we could possibly do about this. She's simply another child prostitute that apparently we allow to operate with impunity on our streets. Even though she doesn't say she is. In fact, she doesn't even know the meaning of the word consent. But we're going to go out of our way to smear her as a prostitute. She later gets arrested, of course. But we'll go over some of the most egregious examples on the other side. Stay with us, folks. You got to look this stuff in the eyes. You got to grab the bull by the horns, folks. This is the truth. This is reality. Face it or be destroyed.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are listener and viewer supported. It's very simple at thealexjonesstore.com. You back us. You fund us. You are everything. And we bring you the very best products, the very best supplements, the very best water filtration systems, the widest selection of Patriot apparel, the very best knives, silver coins, you name it, so that you get a great product and empower yourself while at the same time empowering yourself and free humanity against the globalists. So, a lot of new things at thealexjonesstore.com. Look at these belts. They are super comfortable. They are incredible high quality. They are so durable. They'll last a lifetime. And the way they're designed is something special. So I paid like $75 a year or so ago for a similar belt. And I told Bigley, I like this type of belt. Why don't you get these? They got belts even better than the one I bought about a year ago that I love. And they're selling them for $39 right now. That is a big discount out of the gates at thealexjonesstore.com. Premium nylon tactical belt. This is the premium nylon tactical belt available now at thealexjonesstore.com for only $39.99. It's built from heavy-duty nylon webbing with a smooth automatic ratchet buckle. No holes, no guessing, no too tight or too loose. You get a perfect micro-adjustable fit whether you're working, carrying, driving, sitting at your desk, or on the move. And we've got them in three editions. On the buckle is a little cross, a 1776 edition, and Alex Jones signature edition, making it original and special. It's all black, tactical, clean, durable, and built for everyday use. It's murdered out. It's off black. And right now it's only $39 at thealexjonesstore.com. They are premium. They look great. They have knocked it out of the park with this product. Get yours today and also buy gifts for friends and family and know you're funding the tip of the spear in the fight against tyranny. Also, Bigley knocked it out. Highest rating level with the carbon filters, beautiful, highest grade stainless steel for lower price than other systems that aren't even as good. We're so proud of this. The first group sold out. More coming in about a week and a half. So get your order in now to make sure it's ahead of the line. Those are now available. This is platinum level, gravity-fed water filtration, and it makes this operation possible, multi-tested by top companies to take out hundreds and hundreds of bad chemicals at non-detectable levels, the atrazine, the glyphosate, all of it. You should do this for your family. Do this for yourself. It's a big 3-gallon system. It's amazing. TheAlexJonesStore.com. And then we have the widest selection of Patriot apparel. Some of the designs are the best. Some of them are okay. I'll just be honest. Some of the designs I come up with are okay. But I came up with the concepts of these new shirts. Limited edition, 250th anniversary of America, July 4th, special edition. So it's sold through the middle of June, through July, and then we're not going to sell these T-shirts anymore. They look so good, they'll fuck with another variant or something. But these are limited edition, Liberty or Death, 1776, 2026. They came up with that. I love it. The simple one I came up with, America, 250 years strong, nice, simple, clean, kind of got like a polo look to it. Look at that one. Destroying Tyranny, 1776, Gadsden flag on the Betsy Ross flag. I came up with that design. I'm really proud of these. They're very clean. You'll meet a lot of like-minded people wearing these. Praise the Lord and Pass the Ammunition. I designed that bad boy. They designed the 1776, 250 years of freedom. Oh, I love the one they designed with the brass knuckles, 1776 free. Defund the deep state. That's all their designs. America, ride fast, live free. They designed that. Ball caps as well. All limited edition. TheAlexJonesStore.com. And to keep us on the air, take action now. Big Brother hates it when you fund the tip of the spear. We'll be back. Stay with us.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
Discover trends and global developments years before they happen. Right here on The Alex Jones Show.
Years before they happen, folks. Years before it's well known to any wide degree. And what's the real, like in a word, what are we exposing here? We're exposing that the world that most people think they live in doesn't actually exist. There is no UK where diverse populations are living in harmony. It's never existed. It's been portrayed that way. The success stories are highlighted. The crimes are covered up. Any negative result of the policies pursued is completely hidden and not discussed by the mainstream media. So if you watch what the powers that be are feeding to you, then what you see is a illusion. It's a lie. It doesn't exist. It never has. Just like here in America, diversity has never actually existed in a way that is peaceful and beneficial to everybody. Like, you know, there's there's actually not a Somali population in Minnesota of thriving small businesses. That doesn't exist. It never has. That's what it's been portrayed as, but we see increasingly so that it's in fact a colony of people subsisting entirely off of welfare illegally stolen from the productive members of society. There is no successful immigration of huge swaths of the Somali population into American society where they live and work like the rest of us. It doesn't exist. It never has. It's portrayed as if it exists, but it's all a cover from people that know exactly what's going on and are portraying it falsely. That's the point of all of this, is that when you, it really is, it's like you pull back the curtain and there's the Wizard of Oz. He's just a creepy little old man. He's not really all that powerful. You pull back the curtain on the modern world and it is a seething cauldron of evil. It's crazy, but it's covered up because the people who are doing it are the ones who control the illusion. We're here to shatter the illusion. We're desperately trying to tear that curtain down, rip the veil, and expose the real purpose behind all of this, which is not random, which is not, you know, thoughtless and petulant and, you know, unthoughtful reactions to what's going on. It's a very sophisticated operation that relies on universal psychological manipulation of the average person to continue and proceed. And again, you look at the Rape Gang Inquiry Report and you see time and time again, the only thing the migrants fear is regular people stopping them, is regular people standing up and fighting back. That they fear. And in a way, it's almost sad that like their vision of like white people is so wrong. I wish we were more like how they talk, you know. You'll see people, even like the Carmelo Anthony trial, you see this over and over, people going, oh, if it had been the other way around, you know, or like, well, what do you think a black boy would do when he's surrounded by white people, as if white people are just like this dangerous, you know, tribe of lions just trying to like hurt everybody. I wish we stood up for ourselves. I wish we had the capability to do so. In the UK as well, it's like, you know, they're like, oh, gee, we hope like, you know, the English Defence League doesn't show up with baseball bats to beat us. It's like, I wish they would. I wish they had. This wouldn't be an issue. And clearly the functions of government designed to handle this problem are in fact the ones perpetrating it. So again, you look at what has been allowed to occur, and I guess I got to go over some of this stuff. It's like mentally scarring, and I don't want to black pill you. Like, I don't want to just go through and just be like, look at what they got away with. Look at how, and you can't do anything about it. That's not what I'm saying here. But you have to empathize with these people. You have to understand who these people really are, what is actually motivating them, how it actually feels to be one of them. Because I couldn't possibly imagine some of this stuff. Chloe recalls Chloe, one of the victims, one of the most horrifying victims. And the victims in the rape inquiry, you know, some of them come from totally broken homes where their parents themselves are abusive and they are trying to escape that abusive situation. They end up in another one. I mean, it's totally horrifying and in no way an excuse. You would think a modern liberal democracy with, you know, overwhelming social security nets and all these safe, I mean, you would think they'd be able to handle this. They could if they wanted to. They don't want to, which is why it doesn't get handled. But in other cases, it's, you know, normal kids who grew up in house and healthy households. There's one example that's particularly brutal. Not that, you know, any one of these is any better or worse than any other. I mean, again, even talking about this, but, and it's not like, you know, oh, well, this girl's from a broken home, so it's okay. She's right. Like, obviously that's not what I'm saying, but it is a little bit different, I think, when you have a girl from like a very respectable family. She's like, everything in her life is fine. She's not, you know, doing self-harm or running away because her parents are abusive. You know, she has a happy family life and whatever. And she just happens to get seduced by a much older Muslim guy. There's a story here. I believe the girl is about 12 or 13 and she starts going out with an 18-year-old. right? And that's, you know, not the biggest age gap, but it's enough that the 18-year-old obviously has significant power over her, forces her to do something, films it, and then sends that picture out to all of her friends. And like, you know, in some cases, it's a matter of the girls with no support, and they, you know, it's just brutal. And you just get this image of just like this girl just being tossed from side to side by the vicissitudes of society that she has no control over. And it's brutal and just helpless. And that's sort of what Chloe's story is like, abused sort of at every angle. And it's just horrifying. And then there's the examples of the girls whose lives are pretty good, but they just happen to trust somebody they shouldn't trust. And it's a domino effect where now their images of her are going around the town, and now she's being approached by other people, and now she's being kidnapped. Now she goes to the police and they tell her it's her fault. And it's just this downward spiral that it seems like could happen to literally anybody, because I don't know a single 11 or 12 year old girl that wouldn't, you know, misplace trust once or twice. And that's the first domino that ends up destroying her life. Put yourself in this mindset, would you? Imagine being one of these guys. Chloe recalls a number of occasions when boys under the age of 18 from the Muslim community were pressured and bullied by their older friends and relatives into raping her. Chloe was forced to commit crimes, including insurance fraud and the holding of drugs. On one occasion, she contacted the police to report an assault that was taking place in her house, and when they arrived, Chloe was threatened with arrest rather than the gang members, as the property was registered in her name. And literally with this Chloe woman, it seems like every time she like kind of got her feet underneath her, the Muslim gangs would just figure out where she is and just go literally kick her door down and start living in her apartment. And the police would then threaten her with punishment. But like, you know, what do you do? What do you do about a population that not only allows for the abuse to go on, but actively like pressures other children to participate in it, and that the entire community knows this is going on and approves of it and engages in it? And again, the reason I say empathize with them is because it's very easy to just like not even interpret what's going on, to like not even really think about like what is actually being said here, and just go, wow, that's crazy. Those guys are so messed up. You know, they shouldn't be in this country. No, really think about being one of these people, walking around, doing this on a daily or weekly basis, having no guilt about it, and genuinely feeling outrage if you're told to stop. Genuinely feeling like the only, you know, negative part about this is that you might get in trouble with the white people and they might hurt you. And like, that's it. That's your only concern. But like, it's not actually that big of a concern because the police keep showing up and they keep high-fiving you and doing nothing about it. Like, do you really comprehend who these people are and what their mindset is and how utterly alien it is to anybody in the West with even a shred of genuine Western Christian morality? We actually have a hard time understanding that this is the way their minds work, because ours just don't work that way. You have to be able to empathize with this. You have to be able to put yourself in the mindsets of these people. The police arrested Chloe while she was changing into her pajamas. So in this case, one night, Chloe was out with members of the gang and drinking heavily. Upon her return to her mother's house, her mother reported her to the police. The police arrested Chloe while she was changing into her pajamas, and she was taken to the police station drunk and half naked. She was kept in a cell until 2 a.m. the following morning, at which point she was released. They did not provide her with any clothes or transportation back to her mother's house. So at 2 a.m., they shove her onto the street half naked, where she'd been raped before. After she moved into this new place, again, because of the story of Chloe, she sort of like keeps getting her feet underneath her. She keeps fighting her way out of the cycle, and she gets a house, she gets settled in, she gets a job. All of a sudden, the Muslims recognize her, show up, kick her door down, dose her with drugs. She loses her job. It's a spiral. She fights her way out of it again, gets another place. It happens again. In this case, she finally gets another flat of her own. After she moved in, she became aware of the fact that she was the only white British person in her neighborhood. Every other resident was South Asian. As a result, the gangs discovered where she was living and once again treated her house as if it was their own. The cycle of abuse continued, and Chloe's emotional state deteriorated significantly. Chloe was taken to hospital after a suicide attempt, and while there, discovered she was pregnant. These are just the quotidian horrors that are through every page of this document. The father of the child, a Pakistani Muslim illegal migrant, moved into Chloe's home. Chloe was subsequently coerced into converting to Islam and forced into marriage, both to legitimize the pregnancy in the eyes of her abuser and to assist him in securing a visa, of course. Chloe personally knows at least 20 other girls from her area who were predated on by the Muslim gangs who abused her. The pattern was always the same: grooming, drugging, trafficking, abuse, and rape. Furthermore, Chloe describes being taken into mosques where imams would describe non-Muslims as infidels and preach that white women who dressed inappropriately were, quote, free game. Chloe believes the police, social services, NHS, and government were all fully aware of what was happening, including the racialized nature of the crimes, but they did not intervene for two reasons. Because they, quote, could not be bothered with the paperwork, and because, quote, they did not want to be seen as racist. Chloe blames these bodies, their major push for diversity, for her abuse. And of course, I would throw the media in on that as well. They know what was going on. They covered it up because they wanted it to continue. They're passing digital ID bills and social media restrictions right now to stop the spread of this information because they want the policies to continue, not in spite of the negative consequences, because of them. That's the purpose. That's the reason you have mass migration. To demoralize and eradicate the European people, because the European people are the only people in the world who have risen out of the barbarous mindset that I'm describing here, that created the concept of human rights, that would stand up on an individual basis if they weren't crushed by their tyrannical government. Again, I mean, this is what the bad guys understand. They are simply, methodically going about destroying the greatest threat to their ultimate control over the whole world. And again, in this document, they note that Keir Starmer himself presided over 13,000 instances where guilty parties were given warning letters avoiding all punishment for their routine crimes. He is now the prime minister. He was groomed for this position. He paid his dues. He is responsible for so much of this. He covered up the Jimmy Savile. And you know, from Epstein, Jimmy Savile, the royal family being involved, the rape gang. I mean, do you understand that this is an attack? Do you understand this is a war against you? That the end of the Second World War was not the end of the Second World War? The Second World War wasn't even the Second World War. That it's been one continuous war since about 1913. That it has been one conflict with various manifestations, various flare-ups here or there, but the ultimate drive is towards first destroying the European aristocracy that protected the people, then destroying the people themselves, and that every part of it has been carried out by the same people, like the people that established the post-war neoliberal consensus that justifies and undergirds all of this, are the people that started the war in the first place. It's a problem reaction solution system just over and over and over again. They bring in all the Muslims rape little British girls, and then the British government comes in and says, we need to censor X as a result of this. It's beyond bizarre. It's beyond evil. Again, there's example after example after example of the care homes themselves being operated like essentially child brothels, the police fully knowing this is the case. And again, I would like another layer of the rape gang inquiry report to explain who were the cops that did this. Who were the care home workers that allowed this to continue? Were they all Muslim as well? Was there a program in the British government to say, well, these Muslim migrants are coming in, they don't have jobs, we better get them jobs at the NHS, we better give them jobs at care homes to look over, you know, orphaned children who have nobody else to look for them, to look out for them, nobody else to turn to, so they can then pimp them out to their brothers and husbands, and that is perfectly consistent with their view of morality? This, of course, Jimmy Savile, the satanic pedophile, who's allowed to operate with impunity, just like the rape gangs. Not a coincidence. On one occasion, this is about a woman I believe is referred to as Whitney. She was encouraged to bring her friends because the owner had relatives visiting from Birmingham to celebrate Eid and, quote, expected girls to be there. Within the house, the girls were routinely referred to as white slags, while men wanted Pakistani girls kept pure for marriage. And, of course, the police responded to this. But then you have this, you know, example of one of the only instances where the gangs actually experience fear of any sort, right? They do not fear the police. They do not fear legal authorities. They do fear the EDL. They do fear gangs of British men finding them and hurting them. It's literally the only thing they fear, and it crops up over and over and over again. That's why so much effort has been put into destroying these groups and criminalizing the language that leads up to the action of actually defending yourself and your community against all of this. The gangs reportedly discussed fears that the English Defense League, the EDL, would arrive armed, so they kept baseball bats for protection. They also allegedly spoke of attending EDL demonstrations with weapons. And there's instances like this where it's like, maybe we need some elaboration on this. She was made to clean up knives from the scene of two fatal stabbings. She was present during a shootout. Her abusers bragged to her that they'd hidden dead bodies in a certain location. And it's like, okay, no matter how much you can, you know, again, I don't even understand it, but okay, you can justify like allowing girls to be raped, as crazy as that is, but apparently just calling the child a prostitute allows these people to go, well, she's a prostitute, she deserves it, whatever, it's fine. But there's murder involved as well, like there's multiple murders. And then again, imagine being a 13-year-old girl and having somebody go, I just killed that girl, and I'll kill you next if you talk to anybody about this, and I'll kill your family if you dare to speak about this. And hey, guess what? You go to the police and say, this person threatened to kill me, and the police say, we don't believe you. Actually, you're under arrest for daring to make a report like this. And that happens over and over and over again. Again, I can't even read some of these parts. Like, it's so insane. They talk about a man named Rambo, who was castrated in Pakistan for being a pedophile. He would film torture videos in the, quote, red rooms with these girls. It wasn't about sexual gratification. It was about humiliation and degradation. He was castrated, but he still tortured these girls and was known for this. Police did nothing to stop it. These girls are made pregnant, and they're either forced to get abortions. There are cases of illegal abortions using knitting needle. I mean, again, folks, I cannot talk about this stuff, honestly. You got to go read it. You got to read it. You got to find out about this stuff, because I can't do it justice. Okay. One of the gang members later forced Michelle, this is a woman named Michelle, to go to the police station with him to retract her statement. Okay. So at age 14, she was gang raped and beaten by three men who locked her in a house. She left covered in cuts and bruises. She alerted a friend. The friend told her mother, who contacted Michelle's mother. The police were called, but they claimed there was little they could do without more evidence. And then she shows up in the hands of her rapist, who takes her to the police station and goes, tell him you were lying. The police accepted him as her quote unquote appropriate adult, a role normally reserved for a parent, close family member, social worker, or trained professional. The investigation was subsequently dropped. So the rapists themselves would take their rape victims to the police, demand that they retract their statement. The police would watch this occur and then drop the case, saying, well, we're going to treat him like your parent, even though he's the one you're accusing of being a rapist. One of Michelle's friends who lived in a care home would be collected directly outside by the same gang. Care staff would call the police, but officers reportedly referred to the girls as prostitutes, despite them being children. Again, who trained them to do this? Because you do not have every single officer in every single county in England all saying exactly the same thing without some unifying force dictating that action. Every single time it's brought up to the police, every single time they write them off, they ignore them as prostitutes. That doesn't even make sense. What are you talking about? She's 14. But she's a prostitute, apparently. A social worker told her that at age 14, she would be allowed to live with her 30-year-old boyfriend as long as they didn't share a room. So again, you've got a social worker who's there to take care of the 14-year-old girl that gives her away to a 30-year-old. Michelle believes these gangs remained untouched because the authorities feared being labeled racist. She describes an extensive network of abusers operating across the entire country, calling it industrial in scale. It functions as a large central network with smaller connected groups in specific localities. Michelle claims she was raped between six and 700 different men over the course of 3 years. 600 and 700 different men. It's their community. Again, you've got this Whitney woman recalling that the brothers that were abusing her only ever stopped contacting her when they showed up and all of her uncles were sitting outside waiting for him to show up. Then and only then did they stop contacting her. And again, some of these girls don't have families to protect them. Some of them were threatened with death of their families if they tried to go to them. So they lied to their families about what's going on, keeping their families in the dark, because they're being threatened with death by people who have murdered before and that have told her that and proved it. And this one's crazy because this was an intergenerational example where Whitney herself was abused. Then many years later, Whitney's daughter began self-harming at age 11 and attempted suicide. Her phone contained sexually explicit messages. Whitney's daughter told her there was a, quote, sex room at school run by the older boys. The older boys who, even before they were 18, were pressured by the older members of their community to rape the victims that they'd captured as sex slaves. Whitney repeatedly reported her concerns to the police and social services, clearly stating she believed her daughter was being sexually exploited. Police responses were often delayed. Statements were not taken. The investigations were closed without further action. Social services refused to relocate her family, downgraded the risk level, and eventually closed the case despite ongoing exploitation. I'm telling you. How about this one? Sally. Here's a victim named Sally. Sally is the mother of a daughter who was found guilty of 9 counts of perverting the course of justice for lying about being groomed by an Asian grooming gang and sentenced to 8 years in prison. By the way, she was not lying. She was not lying. She was groomed. She was attacked. She went to the hospital. The hospital noted that her genitals had signs of abuse. They reported the incident to the police. But then Sally's daughter received threats via Snapchat, became scared about the outcome of the case, and withdrew from the process. Because even if you get your abuser in jail, against all odds, in this impossible task, guess what? All of their cousins and all of their brothers, they're capable of violence and threatening you as well. So she gets scared out of pursuing justice, so the police turn around and throw her in prison for 8 years. If that's not cause for a revolution, I don't know what is.
Hi, folks. Doc Bigley here. And today we're going to get to know our H2O. Billy, what kind of water do you drink?
Why, tap water, of course. Ma says it keeps my teeth sparkly white.
I'm sorry to say it, Billy, but your mother is either plain ignorant or worse, a communist. Let me explain.
Tap water used to be safe to drink, but communist subversives in our government introduced fluoride into our nation's tap under the guise of dental health, when in reality, fluoride lowers your IQ, calcifies your pineal gland, and makes you susceptible to anti-capitalist mind viruses.
So you're telling me I'm a sap if I drink tap?
Yes, you are, Billy. Yes, you are. But don't despair. We've found a solution. Follow me. I'd like to tell you a tale of two frogs.
Frog number one has only ever drank unfiltered tap water, chock full of fluoride. Observe him listening to satanic music, abusing substances, and engaging in other perversions.
Look, Doc, they're trying to play leapfrog. They're pretty bad at it, though.
Avert your eyes, Billy. Let's continue.
Meanwhile, frog number two has only ever drank water that has been filtered for fluoride and other impurities. What a happy frog family.
Spill the secret, Doc. How do you get rid of the communist poisons?
with the new water filter system from the alexjonesstore.com.
Say, Doc, may I have a glass?
Why, certainly. Well, that's just swell. No water in the water filter. Listen, I'm not mad at the crew, but I asked for real water in here 30 minutes ago and never got it.
Crew's in trouble again.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
Real change for our children and our future.
Justice! Justice! Oi! Oi, I'm going to get the child. You're all on camera, mate. You're all on camera.
Because today I can announce that the government will ban access to social media for all children under the age of 16.
Can you please put your hands up, those of you who welcome the ban. Hands up for those who welcome the ban. So this just gives you an idea. I think it's pretty fair to say that most of these students there, 11 to 14, most are pretty disappointed with the ban. Let's just come over to you, Isabella. Tell me how you felt when you heard the Prime Minister say no more social media for you.
I didn't think it would actually happen. I kind of believed that he'd chicken out of it and give it more time or more consideration, but he seems pretty sure of it, and I'm not sure if I agree with him.
Government is always about choices, and it's clear to me that a full ban is the right choice. Now, I come to it as a parent myself. I know exactly the fears that we all feel when we're thinking about this issue.
A shadowy secret spy unit inside the government is being accused of being used as a propaganda tool to control the public. This has been spoken about a couple of times before, but I don't think anyone has broadcast it nationally. And if it's true, it is terrifying.
You know, all I've ever wanted for my own children, hand on heart, is for them to be happy and for them to be safe.
In a brazen power grab disguised as child protection, UK Prime Minister Keir Starmer has unleashed one of the most authoritarian digital lockdowns in Western history, banning all under 16s from major social media platforms like TikTok, Instagram, Snapchat, YouTube, X, and beyond. Oddly enough, Starmer will not be banning the leftist toxic cesspool Blue Sky. This so-called Australia Plus regime, set to roll out by spring 2027, demands invasive age verification, facial scans, digital IDs, and big tech enforcement, backed by multi-million pound fines. While Starmer preens about shielding kids from his bloated harms.
These days, kids have to find their feet in a world that changes so quickly, where technology intrudes into every area of their lives. And we know that harms them.
So, the social media thing with Keir Starmer, not 1% of me thinks this is coming from a good place. He's not helping kids in education. He's actively closing schools and limiting opportunities to kids. He is actively giving companies money to give jobs to young people from abroad rather than young kids in the UK when we're seeing record levels of youth unemployment. He's not helping kids get fitter. There's no more sports in schools. He's not helping them with good nutrition and advice. He's always pushing medication.
The real endgame screams louder than any TikTok algorithm, eroding parental authority, funneling youth toward state-approved echo chambers, and paving the way for broader censorship under the guise of protecting the vulnerable. Time to wake up, Western civilization. This is the soft tyranny of the nanny state morphing into full digital Orwellian dictatorship. John Bowne reporting for the Alex Jones Network at alexjoneslive.com.
We are unified by our spirit that God made and our connection to the creator of the universe and our children. And this is the genesis point of the new revolution of information.
I will always believe and I will always say in public that Alex Jones
is the most extraordinary person I've ever met.
I'll tell you, that f***ing guy.
A lot of times.
Alex has been right on for over a decade.
Fluoride, just like Alex Jones was saying, not good. It's crazy.
The real war's here with the globalists and Soros and Obama and the New World Order and BlackRock. They've declared war on us and we accept the challenge. We're taking the country back.
AlexJones.network is tomorrow's news.
The InfoWar is not gone. It has been reborn. AlexJonesLive.com is the new site to find the next step in the InfoWar. Articles, video reports, live streams, breaking news. It's all on AlexJonesLive.com. We need you to be the Paul Revere's and share the links. You can also find us on X at Real Alex Jones and on Rumble at rumble.com/The Alex Jones Show Live. And don't forget to download the app. Go to alexjonesapp.com. The fight continues. If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
AlexJonesLive.com. We've only just begun to fight.
In the southern part of Texas, in the town of San Antone, is a fortress all in ruins that the weeds have overgrown. You may look in vain for crosses and you'll never see a one, but sometimes between the setting and the rising of the sun, you can hear a ghostly bugle as the men go marching by. You can hear them as the answer to that roll call in the sky. Colonel Travis.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is the Alex Jones Show. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, sitting in for Alex today. We're going to be joined by Carl Benjamin, a.k.a. Sargon of Akkad, later in this hour. So I'm going to take a break from talking about the rape gang inquiry, since that is what we're going to be talking about once he joins us, to talk about some other pretty interesting developments in the world today. Looks like there's some developments as well about the Iran conflict, with Iran demanding Israel get out of Lebanon. Again, we're rushing towards an ultimate conflict here, and I honestly do not know which way it's going to go. All hope rests on Donald Trump's shoulders, whether he can stand up to and, in fact, restrain Israel's military activity. We'll see. We shall see. Should actually be an easy solution. It should just be, well, we made this agreement with Iran. We're not responding. Good luck, you guys. Good luck, Israel. You want to stay in Lebanon? Have fun fighting Iran. Like, that's just how it should be. But I want to talk about this from Wired. Leaked expose, or leak exposes, members of Peter Thiel's secret dialogue society. More than 200 of the world's elites registered for a retreat whose agenda runs from panels on cult building and sex to prepping for World War III. An associated app offers matchmaking. These are these elites. These are our elites. These are the people that run the world. They're all just awful. Like, that's what they're talking about? Sex cults in World War III. It's like, no wonder nothing positive ever happens. Ever as a result of these people. A trove of internal records from a secret society for powerful figures in U.S. politics, finance, and tech was left exposed online, Wired has confirmed, naming participants in its events and revealing sensitive personal data they were assured would stay private. The group, called Dialogue, is a private invitation-only organization co-founded in 2006 by billionaire tech investor Peter Thiel. It convenes U.S. officials, foreign government figures, and Silicon Valley executives at off-the-record annual retreats. Dialogue has spent two decades declining to disclose its members. A directory on the website's code was first revealed by Swiss hacktivist Maya Arsene Crimo, I don't know, known for exposing the U.S. government's no-fly list and breaching the surveillance camera company Verkada. Crime W, I'm not sure how to pronounce that, Crimu. tells Wired the directory surfaced via anonymous tip. Wired independently verified its contents. A source separately provided Wired with the registration list for Dialogue's 2026 retreat, which names 222 people and records what the list describes as each resident's membership status and attendee type, including active member and guest. The retreat is scheduled for August 12th through 16th at a venue near Dublin, Ireland. The same data lays out a program of off-the-record sessions, including, quote, money does buy happiness. Yeah, it's just like, oh, gee, I wonder why everything is terrible. It's like the world elite are getting together to be like, money actually is the answer to all of the problems, and we should bring about the Antichrist. And what if World War III was kind of a good thing, actually? What if we could use it to our ends? It's like, well, this is why we don't like secret societies. This is why we do everything we can to destroy secret societies. So money does buy happiness, they say. Bring back nuclear. I actually agree with that. Navigating World War III. Navigating World War III. Not stopping, not preventing, not the horrors of, but navigating. You know? Navigating. Like, yeah, we're going to start World War III. We're going to be the main motive drivers behind the conflicts that spiral into World War III. We need to know how to make the most of this. Really get the most bang for our buck. Battlefield Technologies, end quote, how's your sex life? Other talks include Build a Cult, moderated by the founder of Christian networking site Pray.com, and Build a Party, run by a former White House national security official. Together, alongside the mundane fare of typical thought leadership conference, the documents show an extraordinary convergence of power. The registration records list General Alexis Grinewich, NATO's supreme allied commander. Allied Commander of Europe and head of U.S. European Command, who took the post in July 2025 and is recorded on the leaked list as having attended dialogue conferences since 2021. The website directory names sitting Trump administration officials, two U.S. senators, six members of the PayPal mafia, a former Middle East chief of intelligence, and a sitting ambassador to the United States, along with the founders and directors of many of the country's largest surveillance data broker and advertising data companies. Yeah, this is what we call the world government. This is what we reference as the, you know, corporate aristocracy, the unelected corporate power structure that is currently frantically, feverishly working to solidify and make permanent their unelected and unjustified control over the lives of average people. It's also a little bit coincidental, I guess. I'm not sure what you'd call it, that actually in the Epstein files, there's a time in which Peter Thiel and Epstein are discussing creating a secret society. So that's kind of interesting. You also have Palantir co-founder Joe Lonsdale, who, of course, made news this week when he demanded that the identity of a 19-year-old be exposed for daring not to like the Jewish people, which, again, is sort of terrifying when you consider the power and access that Palantir has in his increasing continuously access to medical records and everything else they could use to blackmail and destroy you. And they apparently see that as an appropriate response to mild disagreement or personal dislike. Absolutely horrifying. Palantir co-founder Joe Lonsdale, Jewish supremacist, whose software runs case management for U.S. Customs and Immigration and Customs Enforcement and data fusion for the Pentagon and intelligence community, is listed on the same society as Army Secretary Dan Driscoll and Representative Jim Himes, the ranking member of the House Intelligence Committee, which oversees agencies Palantir contracts with. Palantir is the operating structure of the New World Order. These people, these organizations, these big tech companies, are at this moment creating the foundation for the one world government, with them in charge again forever. And you saw this with things like Donald Trump's big trip to China earlier this year, in which he didn't bring along congressmen and senators and representatives of the American people. He brought along big tech corporate masters, because that's who's actually running things. Kind of like how when the president of Japan comes and visits America, yes, she has a state dinner at the White House, of course, she's kind of obligated to do, but the main work is done meeting with Miriam Adelson and Alex Karp and Mark Zuckerberg and all of the unelected, self-appointed overlords who were placed in their position, usually with the help of NQTEL and the CIA investment strategy. None of the individuals named in this story responded to Quest for Comment. Rafi Grinberg, who himself is listed as Dialogue's executive director on his LinkedIn profile, is the author of a self-help book called How to Be a Grown-Up. He didn't respond for a request for comment either. The registration records appear to show not only who belongs to Dialogue, but who attends. Of the 222 people who signed up for the 2006 retreat, according to leaked records, 87 are marked as first-time attendees. Others list histories stretching back more than a decade and a handful of the society's founding 20 years ago. None of the registrants, Grinwick included, used a government email address, all registered with personal or corporate accounts, placing their attendance outside the email systems subject to public record laws. It seems like it should be illegal. It seems like it probably is illegal, but they're going to do it anyway, and they're not going to be punished because of who they are. Well, ties the roster together more than any title or office is a shared preoccupation with artificial intelligence, longevity, and the near future. Asked on a sign-up form to predict the future, registrants returned again and again to the same theme, that AI will reorder work, war, education, and belief within a few years. Several foresee mass labor displacement and a swing back toward union and government programs. Others predict an AI winter, domestic terrorism targeting data centers, criminal defendants choosing AI lawyers over public defenders, or religious revival provoked by the disruptions. Societal degeneration, predicted one person, will continue to accelerate. Members also list talents like funhouse construction, whatever that means, accent imitation, backcountry skiing, urban exploration, and meditative and psychedelic inquiry into the nature of reality. Because the people that run our world are universally dorks. They're all dorks. It's like the dork world order, basically. And I don't get it because, you know, you would think people who'd accrued all of this incredible, inordinate power to themselves would be like charismatic and philosophical. They're really not, though. They're really all dorks. It's honestly worse. It's worse than if they were just like hardcore, like, I don't know, man. To me, it's like if you're, you know, goose stepping, you're going to like put a boot on my neck. It's like, whoa, that's what tyranny is supposed to look like. We've got tyranny by a bunch of sweater wearing dorks. We're like, I like urban exploration. What the hell does that? You don't go outside of your house. These people, man. One offers compassion and existential dread. Another, dinner parties, keeping secrets, and remembering birthdays. These are their talents. I'm really good at remembering birthdays. Cool. That's cool. Marcus, their book recommendations skew towards the canonical and optimization-minded. Marcus Aurelius and Milan Kundera, alongside Annie Duke's Thinking in Bets, Peter Attia's Outlive, and from at least one attendee, Thiel's Own, 0-1. Dialogue also plays matchmaker. Its participant form asks registrants whether they are, quote, looking for love, and offers to include single male, single woman, or other respondents in future matchmaking. A separate site, dating.dialogue.org, hosts an app pitched as a meaningful connection for exceptional people. Again, it's like, there's nothing like illegal about doing this. It's just like, why are these the most powerful people in the world? What the hell is wrong with them? Also, you notice longevity, AI. Again, it's not that complicated. It's actually kind of simple. They really think they're on the cusp of living forever. These people really think that they're going to be the first group of people that are going to receive the life extension technology. Some of them probably have already. Said it before, I'll say it again. If you've ever had the chance to sit at a table with like multiple billionaires, I've had this experience. Do you know what they talk about? They talk about living forever. They talk about how they are already privy. They already know people who think they're going to live forever. I know somebody who said he wouldn't tell me the name and he wouldn't tell me any information about it. I tried to get him to. He was basically like, well, I know a guy who's 25 and he's been 25 for 5 years. Yeah, he invented a serum himself and, you know, he wasn't allowed to test it, but he's secretly doing it on himself. And he basically thinks he's frozen his age at 25 and he'll never get any older. There are already people out there who are already testing this on themselves, likely testing it on unwilling, you know, clones or whatever else they have squirreled away in their underground bunkers or in the wilds of Siberia or wherever else they can, you know, avoid detection from us regular people. But they think they're on the cusp of immortality, and they understand that that is an impossible thing to have in the way the world works right now, because you cannot have birth without death. That doesn't make any sense. So the only way for them to actually be able to enjoy what they think they've accomplished or on the cusp of accomplishing, essentially permanent life, right? They won't be immortal because they'll still be able to be killed. It's like in The Godfather, right? If there's one thing history teaches us, it's that everybody can be killed, but they'll naturally, they won't age, and they think they'll be able to live for a couple hundred years at least, maybe forever, but only if they first enslave the entire world in a, you know, permanent slave state system, so the people are actually happy. They're willing to participate in this and think that, oh, if I serve them well enough, I too will be lifted into their ranks and given the immortality tech. That's what this is about. Again, what ties the roster together more than any title or office is a shared preoccupation with artificial intelligence, longevity, and the near future. It's not that hard to put together what it's actually talking about. The forum also gathers sensitive answers, including each registrant's political leaning, which Dialogue promises will not be shared in the app or with other participants ever. That data and the matchmaking responses were exposed in the leak. The records sit in Airtable, a commercial database for each participant. Dialogue logs a membership status, every retreat the person has attended, a biography, a home city, a private access token. Wired is not publishing the tokens, which function as login credentials, or the personalized account links that contain them. The leaked registration list also includes senior figures absent from the public directory of 113. Randy Krosner, a former director governor of the Federal Reserve, who now serves in the Bank of England's Financial Policy Committee. Hallie Hoffman, a former general counsel and acting chief of staff for the Drug Enforcement Administration. Jonathan Greenblatt, the chief executive of the Anti-Defamation League. Paul Gottler, the president of the Cato Institute. Ryan Stowers, the executive director of the Charles Koch Foundation, and Roger Meyerson, a Nobel laureate economist for the University of Chicago. It also lists a cluster of Google and Google DeepMind executives, among them Tom Liu, who leads global affairs for the company's Frontier AI division, and working journalist Saud McKinnitt, a national security correspondent for the Washington Post. She's listed as running an event called the Ulysses Book Club. The rest of the membership spans hedge fund and private equity billionaires, current and former foreign officials, network television stars, best-selling authors, and religious leaders. One of several internal documents Dialogue left exposed on the same online database that held its registration records is a guide for event moderators, urging them to remind participants that everything is off the record and that comments should be concise and non-obvious. It also coaches them to model brief introductions to avoid status signaling in a room full of senators, dignitaries, and tycoons. The discipline imposed by the group did not extend to its website. The directory was embedded in a code of dialogue.org, a near empty page, and was served to any visitor who viewed the page's source. In a separate Dialogue page at app.dialogue.org presents a sign-in screen for Dialogue Global 2026 outside Dublin. The page invites any visitor to sign in by email or Google account and presents no terms of service, no notice that the application is restricted to members, and no indication that an invitation is required. So basically they're saying, it's okay that we hacked this, which I agree. I agree, even if they didn't want you to have all of these powerful people meeting together, deciding things in total secret is obviously counterproductive to running an open society, a republic at all. Dialogue is operated with little public footprint since its founding. It holds at least one retreat a year with assigned seating, moderated session, and a rule that nothing said is for attribution, which is also called the Chatham House rules. Is one of the main forms of this type of control. Past gatherings have been held at Ritz-Carlton Dove Mountain in Arizona and the San Clemente Palace in Venice, Italy, according to Axios, which first reported the group's plans for a campus in the Washington, D.C. area. It's been likened to a tech industry version of Bilderberg, the off-the-record gathering of Western political and business elites that they refused to acknowledge existed for the first several decades and only were forced to admit existed because of the proof that was provided by the likes of Alex Jones, who went to their meetings and filmed all of the business elite coming together. Because again, you know, this just keeps happening where it's like the first response is the appropriate one, where when people like Alex Jones come out and go, you know, there are these secret meetings where the world elite get together the heads of countries, politicians, senators, kings and queens, media magnates, they get together and they coordinate in secret and they plan out the next year's events. And it's all off the record and they all keep it totally under wraps. And the response to that was like, that's ridiculous. That's crazy. Because the assumption is if anything like that was actually true, then we would kind of be obligated to like break it up because that's illegal. Like you can't have that. We, the people, are supposed to have control over our government. We can't have our government taking dictates from some unelected international cabal who does not have our interests in mind. And so they deny it. They say, oh, it doesn't exist. How could that exist? That would be so crazy and illegal. And yet it does exist and we prove it exists. So then they go, well, yeah, of course it exists, but it's because we love you. Yeah, of course all of the billionaires and most, you know, powerful and influential people in the world get together in total secrecy on top of a mountain where no journalist is allowed within 100 miles. And we do it because we love you and we're trying to like save the earth from climate change, guys. It's not that we're getting together in secret because what we're establishing is contrary to the well-being of you and your nation. It's because we actually are the smartest people and we're the ones that need to dictate to you how to behave. And so we discovered that Bilderberg was in fact real. We exposed it to everybody. They had to admit it. They came out and said, yes, it's true, but it's because we're good and we are doing it because we love you. And meanwhile, they're creating alternative secret societies to continue the secretive operation while keeping Bilderberg as a public-facing, seemingly benign gathering of psychopaths and weirdos. Accounts describe the retreats of around 100 participants. The 2026 registration list reviewed by Wired names 222. Public glimpses are rare. The statistician Andrew Gelman published one of Dialogue's invitations to his blog in 2022, describing its format and a registration fee of more than $16,000. The 2014 retreat grew renewed attention that year when an invitation forwarded to financier Jeffrey Epstein surfaced in the U.S. Department's release of the Epstein files. A Jeff Epstein appears on the attached list of past participants, but the person is actually the former CFO of Oracle, not the deceased sex trafficker. Oh, okay. Okay. Just the leader of another sort of, CIA outgrowth surveillance and control operation. Oracle. Wonderful. Clash Report also has a story. Besant, Cruz, Musk, and Kushner among leaked member list of secret society. A massive data leak has exposed Dialogue, a secret society of over 200 global elites. The breach revealed an exclusive matchmaking app as well as off-the-record retreat agendas covering global conflict, artificial intelligence, and controversial political strategies. The leak encompassing private registration database and website code revealed the existence of an exclusive matchmaking application for members. The leaked roster includes high-profile figures such as Elon Musk, Jared Kushner, Scott Besant, Senator Ted Cruz, and Kaja Kallas. Records also name Army Secretary Dan Driscoll, Palantir co-founder Joe Lonsdale, and Strauss Zelnick, CEO of Take-Two Interactive, the video game company behind GTA 6, Grand Theft Auto 6. The document shows registrants uniformly used personal or corporate email accounts, thereby placing the communication strictly outside the scope of public record laws. So again, as we become more aware of this, just understand that things don't just happen. I'm just going to say that over and over. Things don't just happen. World events don't just suddenly occur. Nobody knew it was going to happen. It's like the dew on the grass in the morning. It's like the dandelions cropping up in your flower bed. No, these are actually very thought out, very well planned. They operate in total secrecy. You know, they set out agendas, then they pursue those agendas. Only they couch what they're pursuing in language that seems beneficial or beneficent to the people that they're actually exploiting or seeking to destroy. So, Navigating World War III. I think that title alone sort of tells you everything you need to know about it. That they're planning World War III. These are the guys that would do it. These are the ones that would get us into it, and actively are. And they want to know how to navigate it best, you know, to benefit best from it, so that they get out on the other side better off than when they went in. Not for us, of course. It'll be World War III. It'll be mass death, chaos, and misery. For us, not for them. Not for this secret society. Crazy stuff.
Here's three big announcements right now. We have the 250th birthday limited edition run of awesome designs for this July 4th, 2026 coming up. And they're now available to ship to you as of today, Monday, June 15th, 2026. And they'll be available only through July. They're limited edition. And then that's it. And they fundraise for the broadcast. But I got to say, I'm very impressed with the designs that Bigley came up with. I was heavily involved in this, in the concepts, like Praise the Lord and Pass the Ammunition with the rattlesnake and the AR-15, Liberty or Death, 1776 to 2026. That is a really nice shirt. I designed this one, very simple. America 250 Years Strong. And these are just very clean, Americana, high-quality fabric, very comfortable. Destroying Tyranny to 1776. I did that concept. These are very, very clean. I'm proud of these. I think these are shirts everybody would want to wear. I would certainly want to wear these. America, Ride Fast, Live Free. Just a classic Betsy Ross flag. 1776 Free. They came up with that. I think that's pretty cool. Defund the Deep State. That's pretty cool. I like that really clean one right there. 1776, 250 years of freedom. They designed that. Very clean, very nice. So you want nice, clean, patriotic apparel that, you know, won't get you stabbed by a liberal, but other patriots will know who you are. You can kind of promote liberty and kind of identify who you are. It's fun to wear these shirts, I can tell you that right now. You kind of choose your own adventure. You wear an Alex Jones shirt, then you really got to meet a lot of cool people, but you also might get a bottle smashed over your head. Hundreds and hundreds of great designs from the Gulf of America to you name it. That's a good-looking shirt right there at thealexjonesstore.com. New America's 250th birthday limited edition July 4th apparel now available. And right now, introductory, they're 30% off all apparel on the site, not just the America's 250th birthday limited editions. It's only available for a month and a half. These designs are limited edition. TheAlexJonesStore.com. And we only sell you stuff that really empowers you because we want you to love it and be impressed with it. So we have a relationship with you. And so the only way you miss out is not getting our T3, our bovine colostrum, our ultramethylene red, our Shilajit, our CMOS. They're all amazing. But if you do anything, methylene blue and the water filtration system, when you take this out of the box, I've never seen, I went and checked. It's the highest stainless steel there is. And it turned out it wasn't that much more. I mean, it was somewhat more, another 30% more to have this. But, I mean, it's just standalone. Nobody's got anything even close to this. Congratulations, Bigley. I am very impressed. Very, very impressed. I know a winner when I see it. And this sexy beast is going to help so many people cut out all the garbage out of their water. One of the biggest things you can do to take control of your life. And it's going to fund this operation. So I am literally in love with this. It looks like Marilyn Monroe to me right now. I forget the term when you're attracted to, like, sports cars and objects. I've never been sexually attracted to, like, a sports car, though I thought they're cool. Never been sexually attracted to... I'm actually being a little sarcastic, but I'm not. I'm actually physically attracted to this right now, okay? This is... because I know it's going to help people. I'm being silly. Actually, kind of not. What sexy is it's great. I know a home run when I see it, and I know this is just another big victory. So thank you so much for all you and your support and Bigley knocking out of the park.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today. The Patriots' choice and globalists' dread. Welcome to the Alex Jones Show.
Welcome back, folks. This is the Alex Jones Show, AlexJonesLive.com. I'm Harrison Smith, sitting in for Alex Jones, joined by Carl Benjamin this segment. He, of course, is the director of LotusEaters.com, LotusEaters.com. And Carl, as I understand, the Lotus Eaters, some of your members actually had a hand in helping to compile the rape gang inquiry report that was just released. Is that right? And welcome to the show, of course. And what has been your response to this inquiry report recently published?
Yeah, hey, Harrison, nice to see you again. Josh Firm was a contributor to it. I don't actually know what his role in it was, I'm afraid, but I understand he was a contributor to it. So, well done to him. And, I mean, my response is just like everyone's response. I've had to read. I mean, it's 200 pages long, so I've only managed to get through half of it. And it is a brutal read. I've skimmed through the rest of it, so I'm aware of what it contains, critiques of Islam and whatnot. But the actual substance is in the witness testimonies. And these are just some of the most harrowing things you can imagine reading. I mean, they sound like, honestly, like some sort of perverse fiction. It's like, what's the worst thing that we can imagine happening to a person? Like Stephen King novel, actually. And we'll write that down and have that as the report. But unfortunately, I do tend to find myself believing them because it lines up with what previous investigations have found. And people have been asking, what's the need to do this inquiry? And it's because this inquiry is the first inquiry that wasn't bounded by concerns of political correctness. It's the first inquiry that wasn't taking the feelings of the Muslim community into account. And that's why this one comes across as so much more raw. And I'm trying to think of a nice way of putting this. Revealing, shall we say, about what has happened and the depth of complicity of the community in it.
Yeah, complicity. I mean, the police are actually the ones carrying it out. The people running the care homes are obviously complicit. I mean, they're involved in it. And when you read this, again, it's not about the individual instances of horror, of which there are very, very many. And again, as you point out, I mean, one of the quotes I know you retweeted from one of the cases we were talking about earlier with this woman named Fiona. A police officer returned Fiona to the house where the abuse was occurring and told the men to, quote, have fun with her. Right? This is one of these examples of just like, is this a fiction? Is this, you know, some sort of, you know, no, this is really what happened. But it's not about the individual instances. You read it and it's the description of a war. It's the description of a full-fledged assault by a giant army against the people of England that has gone on in total secret. And so it's not, you know, it's not about the individual instances, which are beyond horrifying, taken together. You read this and it's just every page. It's just this relentless outpouring of horrors, and the scale of it is so astronomical. I'm having trouble putting it in words, but clearly, I mean, this is a war against the people of the UK. I don't know how you can come to any other conclusion.
Well, you know, I think the war has already been lost. I think what this is the occupation. Mm-hmm. I think that the British Imperial State is treating Britain as essentially its final remaining, particularly England, treating as its final remaining colonial possession. And so it has brought in settlers, which is what it did elsewhere, and it is using the law to protect them and victimize the native population. It is something that you, if you read any literature about decolonization, particularly Frantz Fanon springs to mind in The Wretched of the Earth here, the cutting edge of the administration of the law cuts against the natives. It's always in favor of the settlers. It's always against the natives. And so this blade that is the law, which we flatter ourselves to say is applied evenly and equally, is very clearly being used expressly against the white working class of this country in favor of the settlers that have been brought here by the state. And the settlers are the wards of the state. They're the thing that the state is there to protect in an imperial colonial administration. The natives are, in fact, something of an obstacle, something of a burden, something of a resource to be abused. And in that particular case that you gave, it really sounds like the authorities are giving the girl over like a war trophy to be used and abused by the conquering settlers. I really have trouble reading that in any other way.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, it's like a cartoon of, you know, the worst possible, you know, actions of a colonial power going in and abusing the natives. But no, it's actually happening. It's only in reverse, this weird reverse colonization. And, you know, one thing I really appreciate about the work that you do, and it's sort of ubiquitous, and I've, of course, been following you for the last decade, is giving sort of the underlying philosophy behind why things are going on, because we can look at something and go, wow, this is horrible. But you do a really good job sort of elucidating, like, what are the philosophical underpinnings of this that are actually driving the people doing it? And that's what I need right now, because as I look through this, you know, so often it's just they don't want to be racist. And I really have trouble for that being a sufficient excuse for all of this going on. Is it really that bad to be called racist? And how did it get to that point? Help me to understand. Is it just the fear of racism? What's really behind this, do you think? Because again, you just, the horrors that are unveiled in this beggar a better explanation to me. And I'm turning to you to provide it, not to laugh at this, but it's so outrageous. It's hard to do anything else. What is actually compelling the people engaged in this, do you think?
Well, I think you've got to remember that the United Kingdom is fundamentally an anti-racist state. It's in the law, it's in the attitude, and it's in the hearts and minds of the people who administer our country. The police, for example, in the Henry Novak case, Everyone saw that this was very clearly a case where, despite the man is dying on the ground, they took the word of the non-white settler over him saying, "I've been stabbed. I don't think you have, mate." Yeah. Well, then when you go back and explore, where does that attitude come from? Well, it comes from their explicit pledge and their anti-racist doctrine that is currently on their website. If you go to the Hampshire Police's website, you can find their anti-racist doctrine. And what they tell us is they're committed to being an anti-racist police force. And that doesn't mean treating every group the same. Right. In fact, it expressly means treating different groups differently because that's what's appropriate to them. And of course, in the case of what is essentially a settler colonial state in Britain, that means treating the settlers with privileges and treating the natives as, well, barbarians who are deserving of the fate that befalls them. And this comes from the top. It's been the case since probably the end of World War II that the liberal state has become more liberal over time. And this has manifested in what we call anti-racism, but what is more properly called intersectionality, in that the nature of the numerical disparities between cultures and between peoples in the United Kingdom or in your country, I mean, it came from America, this philosophy, the nature of the numerical differences is itself something that is a form of oppression. And so to get to equality, to get to equity, to get to the correct place, you actually have to treat the majority group with more, with less deference than you would treat the minority group. And this, of course, turns into a kind of aristocratic privilege that the minority groups inherit in the name of equality. That's a very short history of how we arrived here and what is going through their minds. They think racism is worse than rape. They think it's worse than murder. They think it is the highest crime it is possible to commit.
And it took like decades of brainwashing to get people to that place, but it's so thoroughly baked in now. Even when they're being called out for it, it's like the UK government can't help but continue this pattern. I know the most recent thing with the murder of Henry Novak is the murderer's brother, who was right there and really actively participated in it, right? He's the one that made the 911 call.
He was expressly complicit. He was the one who phoned the police and lied to them that Henry Novak had racially abused them. And he was speaking to the police when they arrived and told them that he had been racist to them and that he was lying about being stabbed. He was expressly complicit. I mean, now this, I would have thought this would have counted as being an accomplice to a murder, because he seems to have been an accomplice to a murder. And he was in the back of the police van talking in Urdu with his brother about how they were going to lie about this and cover it up. I guess they just didn't realize they were being filmed or something. But I've seen all of this footage. And if I've seen it, it's like, right, okay, well, he's definitely complicit. How is it that the police can't? Well, the answer is they're doing the bare minimum that they can to protect the privileged aristocratic settler group over the despised native group that is just free range, free game. Anything that is done to us is in some way deserved, is what the attitude that comes across is. And until the British people can actually find themselves to vote for a government that is actually in their interests, on their side, against the newcomers, then this will continue indefinitely.
Yeah, and so I guess the latest is that they've officially denied, actually charging him with anything, the brother. And you know, as you point out, I mean, he wasn't just complicit in it. If he had made a different choice, if he'd said, hey, this guy's been stabbed, you need to send an ambulance, Henry Novak might be alive right now. So, I mean, his actions directly contributed to the kid's death. And he's not being charged. So it's like, even in this in this, you know, attitude of hyperfixation on the actions of the government where everybody's criticizing them and the rape report is coming out. And you would think even if it was just for self-preservation, they'd go, we better just charge this guy with something, maybe a slap on the wrist. But like, we got to let people know that we're not as bad as they say. But it's like they're advertising it. They're going, you know what? We're not going to charge him with anything. He's free to go. And frankly, we would have let his brother go too, but you guys figured out and posted on X. So actually, we're going to censor X now. I mean, they're so brazen. What gives them this confidence?
It's that true belief. Obviously the philosophy is nowhere near comparable to Christianity in its grace and dignity, but they're happy to be martyrs for it. They truly believe it. They honestly think in the same way that you would die on the cross if, you know, you were called to, if you were martyred by the Romans or something, they genuinely believe this is the right thing to do. And it's the same with anywhere that this anti-racist philosophy is found. Like, for example, why would any company take massive economic hits for woke, right? The woke era has passed because they can't afford it anymore, but they want to. They were happy to eat the cost. They were happy to take the hits because they thought they were saving the world through representation, through anti-racist activism, all this sort of, you know, gay activism, all this sort of stuff. They were happy to take it. Now, like, from a capitalist perspective, this makes absolutely no sense at all. But from the position of a religious crusader, whose zeal for righteousness is them healing the world, it makes perfect sense. And that's the only way it actually has a logical explanation. And then when you see them actively protesting against people who are, like, protesting for justice for Henry Novak's family, or, sorry, I can't remember the guy in Northern Ireland who got his eye stabbed out by a Sudanese man offhand, because these cases are just coming thick and fast. Right. Like, the day afterwards, a 17-year-old girl was stabbed in the neck by a Pakistani man. I can't remember her name either. She survived, thankfully. But these atrocities are coming so thick and fast now, and we are so far outside of the protection of the law that it's just mad. It's just absolutely mad. And genuinely, I'm worried about living in my country. I'm genuinely afraid of going to a diversified area. I mean, the town center in Swindon, where I live, was heavily diversified over COVID. This all happened from 2020 onwards. Before then, I lived in an English town. I live in an English town, and it was completely normal. And suddenly there is just a wave of people from all over the world, no one particular place, no one particular country, just this wave of people who have been saddled here, because, and I know the government must have put them here, because I'm absolutely sure that when they were living in a village in Sudan or Bangladesh or something, they'd never heard of Swindon. It's not exactly the most prestigious place in the world. The government must be putting them here. It must be paying for them to live here because they don't have jobs. And I'm genuinely worried about walking down the street now. You don't know when some lunatic is just going to come at you with a knife. And honestly, it's a horrible, horrible thing to happen, especially as my town. I live here. I choose to live here. It's, you know, I'm successful enough. I could live anywhere I wanted. You know, I work via the internet, and I'm a successful YouTuber, and I have a successful business. So I could live anywhere I wanted, but I was very, very happy and comfortable in Wiltshire and Swindon because this was peaceful. This is one of those areas. This is a shire. Nothing ever happened, and that's how I like it. I don't want drama. I don't want trouble. I want to raise my family and just have a nice, relaxing life, you know, play Warhammer with my friends, do nothing of any particular note outside of my work, you know. But I don't get to have that now. I get to live in modernity now. I get to live in the colonized state now. And all I'm saying is this is why I support Restore Britain, because it's the only political party in Britain that is going to do something about this.
Absolutely. And, you know, the question that always jumps to my mind is like, what's wrong with everybody else? What's wrong with everybody else that's lived through this change and seems incapable of recognizing it, or at the very least acknowledging that, hey, it might have some downsides. I guess it makes sense. I mean, what you said, I mean, it is a religious fervor that they have. And it'd be like asking a Christian, like, well, there's some things that are bad about Christianity too, right? There's some things you don't like about Jesus. It's like, nope, we take all of it. So, I mean, outside of the religious programming, it really doesn't make any sense. But like, what do you think? Is it really? I don't know, man. I just have trouble rationalizing it, where, like you, you've got tons of neighbors that have lived through this change as well. Are they really blind to it? Do they really think it's a good thing? Do they think it's just happening and nobody's in control of it and things are just occurring and you just have to deal with it? How do they rationalize it? And what is wrong with so many people that seem either fine with or actually in favor of the way things are going, even with all of the evidence, like in the inquiry report?
So one aspect of it is it's difficult to pinpoint the source of the problem. These things aren't administratively in your face. So if the government says, right, okay, we're going to let in 1 million-plus people a year, which they do, by the way, they were proud that they got the intake of immigrants into Britain down to 850,000 last year. 850,000 new people, mostly third worlders, are allowed to come and live in Britain every year. They're not necessarily permanently. Something like half of those are on permanent visas, and you know, 160,000, something like that, have got citizenship. But that's still 850,000 people who now need housing, now need jobs, now take up space in the infrastructure, and you don't know anything about them. So who knows what their intentions are here? So that's the problem is these people just turn up out of nowhere and you just don't know how they got here. But suddenly they're all over the place. And what are you supposed to do about that? Like, what are your options? It's not clear where the problem is originating from. And so it's not clear what you should, where you should direct your ire. Moreover, because the country's changed so quickly and we still have a ruling class that is in hock to political correctness, it's not clear who you are supposed to complain to. I mean, I actually live just outside of Swindon now. I had to buy a bigger house because my family kept growing. So I actually live in just a small village outside of Swindon now. It's about a mile outside. And it's like 97% white English. And we still have a pride flag outside. I mean, the average age of my village is probably about 10 or 15 years older than me. I very much doubt there are very many gay people here. And yet we still have a pride flag flying outside on the town hall of my village. The powers that be are all people who believe in this stuff. And so it's not clear who you are supposed to protest to. And even then, when you do, it's not clear what you're supposed to ask them to do about it. Because, I mean, on an individual level, a lot of the migrants aren't themselves actually dangerous. It's only a minority of the migrants who are actually dangerous, who are actually doing something terrible. It's just the feeling of being unsafe in your own town now is that thing that pervades. Because, hey, most of the migrants are fine, but it only takes one to snap and then stab you in the neck. So you live under a kind of oppressive regime of fear. But that's hard to explain. Like, for the average person who doesn't know why they feel afraid and why they don't like what's going on, it's hard to explain, especially when the mainstream culture of the country is still dominated by people who stigmatize you as a racist for not being happy that this has been done to your country, right? So it's difficult to speak out about, and it's not clear who you'd speak out to, and it's not clear what you would even say. And so in spite of all that, it's still around half of the country that doesn't want any more immigration and wants millions of them to go home. So it is not that the British people, in a large percentage, don't want this to change. It's that the system is so big, Byzantine, and abstract, it's actually unclear what you would need to do if you are not a fully invested politico like I am, you know, like you are. You know, if you're not someone who studies this closely for a long time every day, it's not clear what the problem, what the origin of the problem is and what can be done to solve it.
Well, especially when you have things like the Brexit vote, which was very hard fought and won and was almost entirely, you know, the debate about it was about immigration. People voted for Brexit because they didn't want to be, you know, in hawk to the EU's demands for immigration. You vote, you do this incredible fight, you win, and then you get even more migrants. So yeah, it's demoralization. It's sort of learned helplessness that, yeah, we'll let you vote. You can fight as hard as you want and then nothing will change. You want to try again? I mean, it's really a brutal demoralization campaign that's occurring. And as the Rape Gang Inquiry report notes, you know, this really, the first domino to fall was 1948. And if you look at 1948, it was the Empire Wind Rush. It was the creation of the NHS, the creation of the Tavistock Institute. It's like that year alone was this massive generator of all of these institutions and organizations that have spent the last 70 years, you know, instituting this mindset in the people of England. So, I mean, how do you get out of it? If we're 7 decades into this mind, you know, brainwashing, how do we climb our way out of it?
Honestly, it's really hard to say. Yeah. Since we haven't managed it yet, I'm not going to say that I have all the answers. But I mean, on the plus side, we are being recognized by the opposition now as important and influential figures, not just myself, but the what I guess we call the online right more broadly. And the party Restore Britain has come under relentless attack by the mainstream media because there's a by-election going on. And, I mean, we're probably not going to win it, obviously, but I think we might have a fairly good showing in this election. The party's only 4 months old, so we've made really great strides in that 4 months. And they, I think, have become aware of it. I think they've been unable to not put us on the map in kind of the same fashion Trump did, actually, by the fact that they think, okay, well, we'll just attack him on the things he's offering. You may have seen the John Oliver Tonight video where he says, look at what Rupert Lowe's offering. And then he cuts to Rupert Lowe. He literally says this poisonous offering. Then he cuts to Rupert Lowe saying, we need to bring back Christian values of charity, duty, and forgiveness.
Oh, dear God,
John
no.
Oliver cuts back and he's scoffing like, oh, spare me. It's like, sorry, that's a really wholesome message that I really don't understand what you think the opposition to that is, John. But I think that speaks more to you than to anyone else.
Absolutely. And of course, as the independent puts it, Rupert Lowe is rapidly becoming the most dangerous man you've ever heard of, or never heard of, I guess, because they want
to them.
Yeah. Yeah. To them. Exactly. But it's very reminiscent of early coverage of Donald Trump, right? The most dangerous man out there. And I hope he is dangerous to them. I hope Rupert Lowe does exactly what he intends to do. We have about 2 minutes left. What do you want to tell people about Restore Britain and what is the solution being offered here? Because again, the problem is so overwhelming. It's so ubiquitous. It's seemingly so deeply entrenched. You might read this and go, well, UK's lost. You know, if I was in the UK, I'd be like, well, I'm moving because it's just, it's too late. What's the alternative? How do you regain your island nation?
Nothing's over. Actually, the one thing that we actually need to win is still in our hands. We still have the power of selection. We still are the overwhelming demographic majority, and we still have the choice of choosing politicians who are on our side and not the system side. If we get about 350 absolute patriots elected out of 650, well, Parliament is unbounded in a way that the US is not, or European constitutions aren't. People can point out and say, well, you know, you don't have a written constitution, therefore you don't have these certain protections. That's true, but also that means that Parliament is the sovereign of the kingdom. If we get a government of 350 people who know what the problem is and have just had enough and are prepared to vote through whatever we want to vote through, well, we can fix it all. It's going to be very difficult. There's going to be a huge amount of resistance. But the potential is still there. Nothing is over. Nothing is lost. It's just bad. But things have been bad before. We're a very old country. I mean, it used to be that half the country was occupied by literal Vikings, right, raping and pillaging and ravaging their way across the nation. It's been worse. It's going to get better. Well, it's probably going to get worse, but it's going to get better afterwards. And in the end, we are going to win.
You know, you're right. And it's exactly like here in America. These problems aren't, they aren't real problems. You know, I always, you know, it's not like a hurricane that's coming and you just got to bunker down and deal with it. Actually, if you have the right people in office, it would be a simple matter of make this decision rather than that one. And it's done. Deport these people, send these people home, stop these boats from arriving, and it's really not an issue. The solution's actually simple. That is a very white-pilling message and a very nice silver lining to the cloud. Carl Benjamin, find him at lotuseaters.com. That's lotuseaters.com. Incredible stuff, as always. Thanks for being with us.
My pleasure, man. Take care of yourself.
You too. Stay tuned, folks. Rex Jones.
We have the 250th birthday limited edition run of awesome designs for this July 4th, 2026 coming up. And they're now available to ship to you as of today, Monday, June 15th, 2026. And they'll be available only through July. They're limited edition. And then that's it. And they fundraise for the broadcast. But I got to say, I'm very impressed with the designs that Bigley came up with. I was heavily involved in this and the concepts, like Praise the Lord and Pass the Ammunition with the Rattlesnake and the AR-15, Liberty or Death, 1776 to 2026. That is a really nice shirt. I designed this one. Very simple. America 250 years strong. And these are just very clean, Americana, high-quality fabric, very comfortable. Destroying Tyranny since 1776. I did that concept. These are very, very clean. I'm proud of these. I think these are shirts everybody would want to wear. I would certainly want to wear these. America, ride fast, live free. Just a classic Betsy Ross flag. 1776 free. They came up with that. I think that's pretty cool. Defund the deep state. That's pretty cool. I like that really clean one right there. 1776, 250 years of freedom. They designed that. Very clean, very nice. So you want nice, clean, patriotic apparel that, you know, won't get you stabbed by a liberal, but other patriots will know who you are. You can kind of promote liberty and kind of identify who you are. It's fun to wear these shirts, I can tell you that right now. You kind of choose your own adventure. You wear an Alex Jones shirt, then you're really going to meet a lot of cool people, but you also might get a bottle smashed over your head. So, hundreds and hundreds of great designs from the Gulf of America to you name it. That's a good-looking shirt right there at thealexjonesstore.com.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle, AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.